Sei. Simon Shin Mem Tes. Isra Hana B'meis U'Visach Richa. Meis Bein Akum Bein Yisrael Tachricha V'Asur Mana. So Meis is also Mana. That is a Din D'Oraisa. The Shach, I think, points out that we learn it from Gzeira Shava. Tachrichim is more controversial, whether it's Asur Hana B'Doraisa or Rabbanan, but it's definitely Asur B'Hana. The other controversial part here is the Bein Akum Bein Yisrael. Whether a mace goy is Asur B'Hana or not is very controversial. The Mechaber here, based on a Rashba, says mace goy is also Asur B'Hana. The Gra here, the very first Gra in the Siman, points out that there's a Rashba elsewhere, and a Tosos, who says that a mace goy is Mutter B'Hana, and therefore it's, we'll see in Afkamina, but it's a big Machlok Shoshonim, whether a mace goy is Mutter B'Hana or Asur B'Hana. Lemaisa, we're normally Machmir, you know, like the Mechaber, but we'll see that it has some, perhaps in some cases, room to be makel. The Mechaber continues, the Davkash is Minim Latorko Vnasim Lav, Allah Zman Lavad, Afilo Som Latorko, Lachash Meslo, Nesru Dazman Lav, Milsav, Chin, Nasim Lav, Los Minim Lakachmatchila, Dayan, Lo Nesru. This is the same rule as, you know, Phil and Zekel and everything else, Hazman Lav Milsa. When does something become Shayach to something else? Not if you just set it aside, you actually have to physically use it. I'm not talking about Hektish. Hektish, the special din. They can be mocked or something, but everything else, you make it fill in that. Does that become usher for mundane use? Or you make a, you know, a mantle for the sefer Torah. Does that become usher for mundane use? So the answer is no. Hazman Lav Milsa, something only becomes usher Bihana, or if it is set aside for a certain purpose and actually used for that purpose. So if you sew shrouds, they're totally mutter. If you put the shrouds on a mace without actually dedicating them to that mace, then they're not usher. They're only usher if you intend to dedicate them for the mace and you actually put them on the mace. Base. No yay. Let's just mention this Piskei Tshuva. Piskei Tshuva's here in Sifkat and Aleph. I'll just point out that we saw two opinions about a mace akum. The Mechaber says usher, and the Gra says mutter. In the Piskei Tshuva Sifkat and Aleph, he quotes the Tshuva's Evan Shohan, who says even if it's usher, and we're normally machmer that it's usher, that's only an issur d'rabbanan. Right, it's a safek usher, maybe it's only usher d'rabbanan, and therefore, basically, we're more makel by Meis Akum than by Meis Yisrael. His example is Tzorech Refuah, for the sake of Refuah, we normally assume that it is usher to benefit from a Meis Yisrael, even for the sake of Refuah, but it would be mutter to benefit from Meis Akum for the sake of Refuah. An example of that would also be, maybe we'll come back to this, but, or mention it now, the whole issue of his example of refuah was you take a piece of a mace. How about the more common question? Obviously, we're talking about, not obviously. How about the more common question of autopsies? Right? So, autopsies are a very, very big debate since they started doing it about 250 years ago. They started discussing autopsies in halacha. Why did they do, there are many reasons why they do autopsies. There are two halachic problems in doing an autopsy. One is, if you're doing an autopsy, at least in medical school, etc., right, where they have a cadaver room, not an autopsy, but they have a cadaver room, and they, what is it?
Anatomy lab.
Anatomy lab. In medical school, right, you learn from cutting apart and taking apart and looking at the cadavers. Or they do scientific research on cadavers, or they do autopsies on someone who died in order to learn certain useful information. Number one, that is a chash of Isser Hanah. The Chassam Sofer answered any type of autopsy or working on cadavers because of the Isser Hanah, and so did a number of other poskim. The No Debi Yehuda answered for a different reason, which comes up a little later in the Shulchan Aruch, because of something called Nivol Hamis. Nivol Hamis with vavs. Nun Yud Vav Vav Lamed. He said it's usher because you're desecrating, right? You are desecrating the body of the mace. There's a halach of kavod mace. That's halach of doraisa. So there's an iser doraisa to disrespect the mace. And so there are two possible shushos involved in autopsies and studying anatomy on cadavers, etc. One being nivala mace, and one being iser hanaf from the mace.
Who is it that's concerned with
the mace? The Nod B'Yehuda. The Nod B'Yehuda's reason was nivala hamace. It's not clear that he thought it was hanah. Maybe that's not called hanah to just like see something. There's a big debate, but some sofer's reason.
In their times, was it a required part of medical school? Like, was that the question they were?
The Nod B'Yehuda's issue was more like investigation. Like, people die, so they want to learn from how they die in order to advance medicine. I don't know what they did in medical school in his days. That was like just scientific advancement. But, you know, this. It's the same basic idea. You learn medicine, just one is more routine and one is more for, you know, special study. I don't know when they started doing it in medical school. Because I'm pretty sure the new Nod B'Yehuda Shaila was not medical school. It was scientific research. And particularly, like, when there was a special disease that they wanted to learn about. Anyway, this is a big debate in the poskim. Pretty much everyone agrees that it's an Isra Nivala Mace. Whether it's also an Isra Hanah is somewhat debated. We're not going to get into it. That gets into the question of whether an abstract Hanah is called a Hanah, because you're not like actually using it physically for something, you're just gaining knowledge. So is knowledge Hanah? That is a big debate. Lemaisa, this is Ad HaYomazeh. It is very,
The issue of nivala mace, is it clear that it applies to mace akum as well?
No, it probably does not apply to mace akum. So basically, the main heter nowadays is, if you're going to medical school, is mace akum. Most people in America, at least, are akums. I think like 98% of them or something. And you can, try to, with only a tiny dose of cleverness, figure out how to maximize your odds of getting a mace akum, or rely on Rove, etc. Do they tell you? They don't tell you the names of the mason when you go to medical
first
school.
Names only.
What?
First names
only. Okay, so the guy's name is Maishi, then you have an issue. But, if the guy's name is Albert, then there are Jewish Alberts, but there's just more Goyish Alberts, because 98% of America is Goyim. Okay, in Israel, so it's a little trickier. Different places have different nihugim. But the best solution to this problem is meis akum, because there's no isser of nivala meis for meis akum, and because even if there is an isser hanah meis akum when we're machmir, that isser hanah is more kal, and therefore, for the sake of refuah, we can easily be dochet.
Why is there no nivala meis for meis akum? Meaning, isser hanah, I hear we already distinguish differently between Goyim and Jews, but like, why would nibble be different? Isn't it like from the dignity of the species?
No, because there's no chiyuv kvura on Meis Akum. It all stems from kavod habrios from kvura. So now there is an inyan of kavod habrios, but okay, kavod habrios kavod habrios could be more flexible, perhaps. And after all, maybe nowadays that's not considered an affront to your kavod habrios, and maybe in our tradition it is, but I don't,
volunteer for it.
Yeah. So,
no one wiggles out of the saying it's not nivel, because what is it, nivel means like degrading.
I know, but it's hard, because, it seems very clear that even any type of revealing that, now, you could say maybe since they preserve the bodies, it's not nivel, maybe it's only nivel in the old days when the bodies used to stink. I don't know, I haven't seen. I hear this far. Anyway, Lemaisa, this is a big, big, big discussion, both in terms of medical school and in terms of autopsies. Is there a heter for Jews? There's Lemaisa. There are many different opinions. We're not going to get into all the details. One of the big machlokes is the famous Nod B'Yehuda. This is a very important Nod B'Yehuda, about whether there's a heter of Pikuach Nefesh. Is there a heter of Pikuach Nefesh to do nivel hamis, and under what circumstances? After all, without autopsies, Again, I'm not talking about forensic autopsies for the police. That's a different issue. Although you could say that's also Pikuach Nefesh, maybe, right? After all, if they don't do autopsies to catch murderers, then maybe people think they can get away with murder. But let's say someone dies of a disease, so they want to check to investigate the disease so they can save people. Let's say you want to go to medical school. If you don't go to medical school and learn, then you won't be able to save people someday. So this is a very important note of Yehuda, because it's a principle of Kultur Kula. What's the very important principle of note of Yehuda? Exactly. There are three basic opinions in the poskim, although one has been accepted by most poskim, about how about pikuach nefesh when it comes to autopsies. There are two non-mainstream opinions. One is the Binyan Sion. The Binyan Sion holds it's usher, this is a radical chiddush, which we don't hold like, it's usher to do an autopsy even for pikuach nefesh, someone's mamish about to die. Why? Because pikuach nefesh only matter bin adon lamakom and not bin adon lachaviro. Because you have no right to take away the rights of the dead person in order to save someone else. If he was alive, he'd be chayav in saving someone else. But once he's chafshim and a mitzvah is dead, so this is a big chiddush. Says aser even for pikuach nefesh mash. That's a big chiddush, that pikuach nefesh is not doche ben adam lechaviru. And he says it's doche ben adam lechaviru of live people, because they're chayiv to save. But it's not doche ben adam lechaviru of dead people, because they're potter. Lechor also then a shotet, right? Right? You couldn't take money of a shotet for pikuach nefesh, because it's a big chiddush. Okay, that's not mainstream. The second opinion is the shot machan echayim. I'm not sure who that is. He says that it's mutter for medical research and I assume training because of pikuach nefesh. Okay, obviously it has to be something serious. It can't be something silly. But for like serious advancement of medicine or training, it's mutter because of pikuach nefesh, because we all know that without medical knowledge, then you won't be able to save so many people. Neither of these are the mainstream approaches. The note of Yehuda and the Rove Poskim say, okay, the note of Yehuda and Rove Poskim say that, of course, much of Pikuach Nefesh. Pikuach Nefesh docha everything in the Torah, whether it's been on the Haveira or whether it has been on the Makom, and therefore it's much of Pikuach Nefesh. But what counts as Pikuach Nefesh? They say, come on. Everything in the end you'll save some life with, right? So, you know, go to medical school on Shabbos and take your tests on Shabbos and, you know, eventually you'll be able to save a life with it. You know, everything eventually can be used to save lives. It's in and of herself, so don't keep the whole Torah because, you know, someday you'll be able to save a life. They say that's not called Pikuach Nefesh. Pikuach Nefesh doesn't mean anything that will advance medicine. Pikuach Nefesh means there is someone dying. What it calls a chole b'faneinu. If someone's actually sick and they're dying, that's Pikuach Nefesh. Just to be able to advance life-saving research and training, that's not called pikuach nefesh. Someone has to be sick in front of us. Yeah, the poskim say they don't mamish have to be in front of us. We can, you know that they we can know that they're living someplace else, or we can be sure, you know, that they're around. But he says, just stam going to medical school, that's not pikuach nefesh. No one's dying right now that you're trying to save. It's just long-range planning, or just scientific research, that's not pikuach nefesh. Yeah, in the end, we'll understand things better and be able to save people. That's not pikuach nefesh. Pikuach nefesh is if someone's dying right now. Like you said, let's say someone dies of a disease and other people have that disease. It's like a plague or something a little later. And they want to do an autopsy on this guy to figure out how to save the other guys. That's pikuach nefesh. The guy's mamish dying. They're trying to save him. But just advancing our medicine is not pikuach nefesh. And this is the mainstream halacha that it is mutter for pikuach nefesh, but only chole b'faninu is called pikuach nefesh, and that's why we assume there is not a blanket heter for autopsies and for anatomy lab for training on cadavers, just because it in the end will help you save lives, because it's not for a chole b'faneinu. There would be a blanket heter. Chas v'shalom, this happens sometimes. There's some terrible disease, some new thing. The scientists, like, you know, I know that a lot of people are getting this, and the first person dies, and they said, you know, maybe we could figure out how to save them if we, investigate this, if we do an autopsy and try to figure it out. That the Nodi Hudo would matter. But just general long-range advancement, he would not matter, and that's the mainstream halacha. I'm not getting into all the details now, so then how do we do anatomy lab? So the best is Meis Akum. What happens if you're someplace where they only have Meis Yisrael and you're in medical school? Then other postum say maybe in some places, like, not everyone has to cut up the cadaver. Some people just watch. If you're just watching, then that's not nivela meis. You're not doing anything. And maybe that's not even hana, because if you're not physically doing anything, you're just looking, maybe that's not hana. And therefore, there's room to be makel to just watch and have, like, the other students actually metapel with the cadavers. In general, there's a lot of other questions. What if the person donated his body to science? Could he be mochel on this? Or not is very controversial, but it's not a poshut heter. Okay, so we're not going to pass in every situation now, but these are the general rules. That gets into the general question of pikuach nefesh, and it's a well-established principle in the modern-day poskim that the heter of pikuach nefesh, certainly b'zman hazeh, bein Yisrael, bein Lagum. Even though the Mishnah Berurah doesn't quite go all that far, but most of the time says the Rapasha nowadays, I think it's a minute Pasha nowadays, that the Heter Pikuach Nefesh is, if someone called me and said, I have a Chola B'faninu, who's a Akum, should I, do whatever Isser it is in the Torah, I would say absolutely yes. Okay. But again, it's pretty rare to have a case of Chola B'faninu. In general, Agav, not talking about doctors, it's... What? Yeah, I'm saying if someone, usually you don't have like some new disease, it's pretty rare. I'm saying someone dies of a disease that's been around for hundreds of years, they know a lot about, even though there's other people with that disease, they don't need to do an autopsy on this guy. It's only if it's some new disease or weird case, which might happen in the world once a year, but there's 8 billion people in the world, that's still rare.
And for transplants, like the person still has to be alive?
So for transplants, it's always a whole lot of you. Right, I mean, transplants, you're actually transplanting to a specific person. Right. So then it's Pasha that is motive for transplants. Again, not according to the Binyan Zion.
But
it's Pasha that is motive for transplants. That's Cholo B'Faneinu.
Right.
Again, B'Faneinu, I don't have to know his name. I mean, it's going to a certain Chola who actually needs it now. But you can't have transplants for Levi. You can only have them when it's B'Faneinu. So transplants is Pasha motor. Again, assuming that it's coming from a dead person, which we already discussed, and obviously only to a live person. Okay. So this is a big halachic question. And we're not going to get further into it now, but these are the basic yesodos. Let us move on a little. The rest of these details may come up a little less often, but again, even though the poskim are makel, the makam refuah, and other unique cases by Meis Akum, stam, we assume Meis Akum is asur b'hana, where machmer like the shach. Agav, it's also a very important part of, I don't know anyone has been, of the rabbinate in Chutz La'aretz at least, one of the important jobs of a rabbi and communal leaders in Chutz La'aretz is to do ishtadlus with the government authorities to not do autopsies when Jews die, in cases where the ishtadlus is shaykh. Obviously it's not up to us, and sometimes maybe they have to for whatever reason. It's a real pikuach nefesh or something. But in many countries, there's a lot of leeway given to the police when they do an autopsy when someone dies and when they don't. Medical autopsies are, I don't know how often they do medical autopsies if someone dies. They usually know why he died.
I think legally you only have to do it in suspicious circumstances.
Right.
Or public space.
Okay, or what?
Someone dies in a public space.
Okay, so fine. So usually, meaning the hospitals, they're not going to do autopsies, in normal circumstances, because they know why the person died already. He was in the hospital. But police often do autopsies if there's suspicion. Okay, when do they have to? When do they not have to? If mamish someone gets murdered and it's a, real invested, like one of these crime show things, you're not going to convince police not to do an autopsy. But in many cases, there's room for judgment, and one of the serious, significant responsibilities of an Orthodox rabbi in America is to tashtadlanus with the police not to do an autopsy whenever, they can possibly be convinced not to, meaning when it's very obvious how the person died. It just, there's no, you know, just, you know, normally just to fill out the paperwork, they would do an autopsy so they could write, we saw with our own eyes. But everyone knows anyway, and therefore if you ask them nicely, they'll usually not do it. It was recently in the news, right in London, there was one district in London, I think, where there was a very, very mean person, medical examiner, who did autopsies on everyone, and didn't listen to any of the shtablonus of the local rabbanim there. So the kahal tried to do shtablonus to have her fired. I don't think they succeeded yet, but I'm sure they will. No, because I think she was an actual mean person. So it's like, no one's really going to take her side. She was only mean to Jews. But anyway, that's a big thing. Okay, fine. Base. Noi ha-mesa m'chur m'gufo ko pe'a nachis chayotz ba'asurim ko ha-mesa atzmo. What if someone dies and they have their abizrim? No. What's the... Accessories on them. Yes. Jewelry and accessories on them. So it says anything that's a that's an accessory of the mace that is attached is usher just like the mace himself. Okay, how attached? So says the Ramah, V'davkein k'shurim b'sar is good, like a wig. Avalim einon k'shurim mutter, V'lachein mutter li'tol tabash v'yadosh ha'mesim k'ayosmem. Only if it's mamish attached, like tied on. But if it's not tied on, just rings, then someone dies, we take off the rings, and they're perfectly mutter b'ana. That's not considered part of the Isra Hana of a mace. However, something tied on would be considered part of the Isra Hana of the mace. The shach is machu like the bach. We're machu like the shach and the bach. Even if it's not tied on very permanently, it's just woven in so that it's attached. Even if it's not attached, very permanently. But if it's attached, then we assume that's part of the Isra Hana of a mace. Like, for example, a replacement tooth, someone has a gold tooth or something like that, and that's part of the Isra Hana of a mace because that is attached to their body fairly well, but jewelry is not attached to the body, and therefore jewelry is mutter. Just one second, there's another reason jewelry is mutter also. The Pesachei Tshuvos of Katan Daled quotes from the Sefer Bechor Shor, who says that really he has a different reason than Ramah, jewelry is mutter. He says the whole issue in the first place is only for things that are like parts of the body, like wigs and false teeth and etc., that are similar parts of the body. But things that are not even similar parts of the body, they're just jewelry, everyone agrees that they would be mutter. So, bottom line, if someone dies, their jewelry just goes to their yorshin. There's no Isra Hana on the. There's no Isra Hana on the jewelry, only the things that are attached as enhanced substitute body parts or extensions of parts of their body.
I mean, so jewelry that is attached or woven into the hair is still jewelry.
So, you mean if someone has dreadlocks with...
It could be like a silver pin or something like that that's woven into the hair very strongly.
Then that would, according to this Pesachei Tshuva, that would be mutter. Because... it's still not like a part of the body.
Like a kippah that's clipped into the hair.
Nah, clipped into the hair is not attached. That's not attached. So I think we assume our shetels are not so attached. So they would not be usher because they're not attached, even though they are similar parts of the body. So all the jewelry and things like that, basically almost all things nowadays are not asur b'hana, except maybe because they're not attached, and most of them are not substitute parts of the body, except for things like in the Pesachei Tshuva discusses forgotten bees or gimel, false teeth and such. Those become part of the of the body. If over the dead person willed something that is accessory attached to their body to their children or someone else, then that disattaches it, like they've conceptually disattached it from their body, and it's much of anah, except for their hair. Their hair is considered an organic part of their body, and therefore there's no way to matter that banah. That is controversial, and Nekudas HaKesef argues and says, nope, if she wills her hair to her daughter, then that's not really part of her body. Okay, lemaisa, it doesn't really come up nowadays. Say, Tikatel. Okay, we don't have Mrs. Besdin nowadays. Principle is even if someone's high Mrs. Besdin, they're not Ashbara. No, until they actually die. Let's say his parents were so... Yeah? It's a great question. After all, there was no Mises Bez in the time of the Shulchan Aruch either, so why did the Ramah quote this?
Again, the torture.
And I'm not sure. It's a good question. Let's just say maybe they were being killed by the Goyish government, but then it's hard to imagine what the Hapmina would be. Of course, they're not Aser B'Hanah. I'm not sure. It's a good question.
Could just have like Shabbat Mitzvah spinning off, but like Aser him to take stuff from the body of the Jew?
Yes, because of Gezel. Because whatever we think should be buried with the mace, it's Gezel for someone to take. So a Goyish grave robber is violating the Shem Mitzvah Neoch of Gezel in Echnami. He doesn't answer a Chiyu of Kavod HaMeis, but he has an answer Gezel. So anything we need for our Kavod HaMeis is Gezel for someone to take. Gimel, Imhayu Avim Zarkalho, we just read this. Let's say the parents are grief-stricken, they take expensive silk clothes and they throw it on the coffin or the mita of their son who died. So interestingly, this is a very interesting psychological, philosophical psak. You know, the question is autonomy, right? Autonomy versus paternalism, right? Is it, do we say if that's what they want to do, they're not halachically a shote, right? They're bar das. If that's what they want to do, then it was respecting their autonomy to let them throw all their expensive clothes and make it aser b'hanah and to express their grief for their son. Or do we say, no, they're in a mood, they're in a very difficult situation where they're not, their judgment is compromised by the tragedy that befell them, and they don't really want to do this. They're just beset by sudden grief, and it's against their better judgment, and therefore it's Hashem's Aveda to stop them from exercising their autonomy. Okay, this is a deep philosophical question which underlies many, many issues both in Torah and in general political philosophy. The clear psak of the Shulchan Aruch here, based from the Gemara, is that, no, we don't respect autonomy that much. We know that people have moments of weakness, whether it's moral weakness, whether it's emotional, here it's emotional weakness, where they go against their better judgment, and we say that what they really want is their better judgment, not their momentary ruach shtus, and therefore, just like in the moral realm, if someone sins, they really want to be a tzaddik, they just have a momentary shtus, so over here, if someone just acts out of grief, they really want to be financially prudent. They just have a ruach shtus of grief, and therefore it's Hashem's aveda to confiscate all this expensive clothing from them and not give it back to them until after the funeral. As a matter of fact, if you do give it back to them, then you're chayv to pay because you become a shomer aveda and you're a posheya, right? And he tzilu chayv shirosam yechzir al avli imo v'chaz v'zorka v'nesh v'chayv hamachshir l'shalim d'havik yzorka l'mokim g'du d'chayos v'el listen. If you do take it, you become a shomer aveda. If you give it back to them, it's like abandoning it in wild animals in a hefker area, and now you have to pay them for it when they come later and say, why didn't you stop me? Okay, this is, I don't think this comes up nowadays, but I think the philosophy and psychology is very interesting. That we believe that there's a limit to someone's autonomy, and you have to, what they really want is their deeper judgment and not their momentary mood. And B, that, you know, when people are grief-stricken, they sometimes do illogical things, and you have to very sensibly figure out how to keep them from doing the wrong illogical things. However, that might come up in your social setting. However, and this is why I have to save them, if they succeed in throwing it and it touches the coffin or the mita, the bier, then it becomes aser b'hanah im hein shol shezorkalim, if they belong to the person who threw them. You can't aser davar she'eino shelo. As long as they threw it on, having in mind they wanted it to be buried with their son, they wanted $1 million worth of fancy silk to be buried with their son, and it belonged to them, and they had a right to do so, then it becomes aser b'hanah, and that's why you have to stop them from doing so. Agav, this Isra knows not d'oraisa. It's not d'oraisa. This is not tachricha mace. It's not a mace, and it's not something butl to the mace. This is only Isra d'rabbanan, the Shach says, because it can be similar. It can easily be confused. Tachricha hamace. The Ramah is at the end. And hadasha tiro lavachol akilim shom licha maceim on l'kvura lo nesru. The only things that are usra are things that, as the Machaber just said, are intended to be buried with the mace. But things that tools you use for the mace, of course, are not usra b'hanah. They don't go with the mace. You're just using the tools. And therefore, the board that you put the mace on for the Tara, or the things you carry the mace on, those are obviously not Osir. You didn't intend to leave them with the mace permanently. They were just tools you used temporarily. Okay, and lastly, Kol Marbekel Mace Arisa Ovum Shemal Tashkis, which again is goes back to what we've been discussing. Okay, any other questions about Shin Mem Tes? Yes?
But in itself isn't usher, like in the next two shops, three shops later. He says that, but, Amita Shemolich, and what makes the clever way
to No, the Mita Hanikberis and Amita Shemolich. There's two different Mitas.
No, but the language of the Shulchan Aruch is Amita Hanikberis, and he explains it as no snow so public food.
Yeah, that's the Mita that goes into the grave with him. That's what's usher. The board, it doesn't mean bed literally. The board that gets lowered into the grave with him, like for example a coffin, that's Asur B'Hanah. The board they carry him on and then they take back and use for the next guy is not Asur B'Hanah.
That's not what he's saying, that is.
Okay. We will skip Shin Nun and go to Shin Nun Aleph, which is a big, Ad HaYom HaZeh is a big debate. Aleph is not Tachricha, Mace Motel Asos Mikalayim, the Gemara says Mefurish, you're allowed to bury the mace in shrouds of shatness. Why? Because Mamesim Chafshi, once he's dead, he is not Chayiv and Mitzvos anymore. Okay, nowadays the minhag is not to do that, because we give a minhag to bury in Davka linen, and not wool. Not because of Shatnez, just because the minhag to bury in linen, Al Pi Sod. But, theoretically, you'd be mutter to bury him in Shatnez, because he's not Chayiv and Mitzvos, or at least that's one of the reasons. What?
When it came to the discussion about tzitzis, there's a whole concern about the case of the mace.
Okay, so hold on one second. This is that is going to be a little tricky. Okay, the mechaber here is a gemara. Both parts of the mechaber are the gemara, which is that you're allowed to bury in klayim, but not in tzitzis. Why not in tzitzis? The reason that the gemara says is because of of loig l'rush. Even though there are other reasons also given, the Gemara Menachos says, because of Loi Glarush. Right? So there are two theoretical reasons you could have given him tzitzis. One is because, for Tchias HaMesim, he will have the tzitzis. That gets a little tricky. What? How is it going to help him to have tzitzis in Tchias HaMesim if he's wearing shatness? He won't be able to wear his clothing. So the simple shot is that we're not worried here about Tchias HaMesim. What's he going to do in Tchias HaMesim? He'll have to deal with it. When the time comes, we're worried here about Loi L'Rush in the Mechaber. And the problem is here, what's the obvious problem in the Mechaber? It's Loi L'Rush, meaning Loi L'Rush, it's making fun of him. We're all wearing tzitzis, and we bury him without tzitzis. So it's like, ha-ha, you're a putter from mitzvos, you're not a yid anymore. So that's disrespectful to take away the mitzvah tzitzis from him. The obvious question becomes, what?
That he's wearing them or whatever.
The idea.
No, how about Sif Aleph? Why isn't it disrespectful to bury him in Shatnez? I thought that was an obvious question. In the Mechaber, if it's disrespectful to bury him without tzitzis, why isn't it disrespectful to bury him in Shatnez? And here the Beis Hillel brings down that all the... And that's what it says in the Gemara. It's the Kasha in the Gemara, not the Mechaber. So the Beis Hillel brings down that all the Rishonim ask this Kasha, and there are three main answers. What?
Beis Hillel?
Beis Hillel is one of the Neforshim in the fine print. Brings down the Rishonim ask this Kasha. On the Mechaber. The Beis Hillel says, Hadi Yesh L'Hakshav Mashikasav B'Sif Days, and he says, etc. He says, it's Solstrom Zezet. So he says, Tosos already dealt with this question. There are three main answers in the Rishonim. One is Rabbeinu Tam. It's more like the Russian Tzitzis, because Tzitzis counts like all six supreme mitzvahs. Remember, it was Karkav, it's called Mitzvah Hashem, and that's Gematria, and things that add up to 613. So Tzitzis is more significant, it's more insulting. Shatnez is not so significant, it's just a regular mitzvah, so it's not so insulting. The Ramban gives a different answer. He says Tzitzis is very noticeable. Either there's Tzitzis on the corner or it's not, so it's insulting for him not to have Tzitzis. Shatnez isn't noticeable. You look at something, yeah, how many people, probably 1 in 1,000 people knows how to tell if it's Shatnez or not. And therefore, it's not insulting because no one's going to notice. And the Reed gives a Lundish answer. So there's a philosophical answer. Tzitzis is more significant. It corresponds to the whole Torah. There's a practical answer. The Ramban. Tzitzis is visible. Shatnez is invisible. And there is a Lundish answer. Re, he says, but this is a big fit. I'm not going to justify the Lundish. He says, it's only usher to wear Kalayan if you're Nenef in the Kalayan. And since he's dead, he gets no Hanah. So therefore, it's not a problem of Kalayan. But Tzitzis, even if you're not Nenef, you're Chayvin Tzitzis if you're Lovish. That's a big Lundish assumption, right? That I'm Chayvin Tzitzis even if I wear, but I'm not Nenef. I'm only a sort of Kalayan if I'm Nenef. The Gemara talks about Chimam sometimes. So if you grant that Lundish assumption, then it makes sense. When the guy's dead, he's not violating Klayim, because even a live person, if he didn't benefit from the warmth, wouldn't violate Klayim. But he's still Chayv and Tzitzis if he would be alive, because you don't have to benefit from the clothes in order to be Chayv and Tzitzis. Okay. Which makes sense. I mean, when we wear a talus and shul, make a brach on it, we don't get any physical benefit wearing that talus. We're usually not cold. We're usually hot. And then it's annoying to have the talus. Right? Okay. We will get into that now. Yes?
I mean, how many of you are all about Hana and the Shkiva? And, I mean, he seems to be a Baal Hana in some ways. Why? It's
funny. Why Hana? The dead person is Nene from his clothing?
Isn't the amount of things that we do, the covet of mace, not Hanah.
No, he assumes that it's only physical Hanah. I mean, his assumption is that if you wear shatnez for looking nice to others, that's not an isser. It's only usser if you physically benefit from the warmth or the protection from the elements, which is a big chiddush, right? If I have a, you know, shatnez bow tie, is that an isser d'oraisa because I'm showing off that I look fancy, but it doesn't actually warm my neck? I mean, usually, or something like that. Okay, halacha l'maisa, we're generally machmer in these things. I mean, don't wear shatnez in any circumstance, but that's a whole lumdus of the re, ayin shem tosfos anida. We're going to get back to halacha l'maisa now. Halacha l'maisa, by the time of the Rishonei Ashkenaz, they had developed a minhag, davka, not to put tzitzis on the mace. Davka not to put tzitzis on the mace. And therefore, says the Rama, Yechom de Ein Sarach Tzitzis, not just Ein Sarach, the Nosi Kalim point out that it is that you Dafka shouldn't put Tzitzis. Where did this minute come from, Dafka not to put Tzitzis? So, the Rishonim say that maybe, really, nowadays it's making fun of the person to put Tzitzis. Why? So there are two different explanations of this. If you would go to Rishonim, as to why Ashkenazim, is that only found in Ashkenazim? It's mainly found in Ashkenazim. Have this minig not to put tzitzis with a re and a revein atop. The re says because nowadays no one wears tzitzis, and therefore it's making fun of him to put tzitzis. Like all of a sudden now you're wearing tzitzis. Okay, that re wouldn't apply to Zmanazeh because Zmanazeh, I don't know, most Orthodox Jews wear tzitzis. I haven't checked. I'm not a high school rabbi, I don't have to check. But even if I was a high school rabbi, I wouldn't check. It's not so productive. But lots of people wear tzitzis. So at least, you know, most of you that we know wear tzitzis every day. That wouldn't be a problem. Reino Tam says, though, he says that, no, tzitzis means all tariyag mitzvos. Says people don't keep all tariyag mitzvos nowadays, and therefore, it's like insulting to them, say, oh, we're burying you with the sign you kept all tariq mitzvos, because, you know, if you praise someone for something they didn't do, it's really insulting them. Okay, so these are sound a little weak, but for these reasons, they developed a minhag in many Ashkenazim, and they were made a Gershom when he died, said tzitzis chutz, and they weren't sure what he meant. Maybe he meant, I don't want tzitzis. So if Rabbeinu Gershom didn't mean to deserve tzitzis, then we certainly don't. So, therefore, this became a big debate. There became many minhagim what to do. And there became a few compromises. So what are the compromises? There are two main compromises, Minag Eretz Yisrael and Minag Chutz La'aretz. Minag Chutz La'aretz is the Ramah of a Nag L'Kavra B'Tzitzis, Ach Poslin T'chila Tzitzis, or Korchin Echad Min HaKnafos. The Minag is to bury him in Tzitzis. This is the Minag in Chutz La'aretz. Inside the Aron, we don't see what's going on inside the Aron. We're a funeral. But inside the Aron, the guy's wrapped in a talus. Not a talus kaftan, what we call Tzitzis. A real talus. They wrap him in a talus inside the aron. However, they, in order to sort of be yotzei a little, both opinions, they wrap him in a talus, but they passel one of the tzitzis either they passel the tzitzis first, he says, they actually like untie one corner, or they at least wrap it up and hide it inside the corner. The Shach says, quoting the Bach, he doesn't like this idea of passeling. They should either wrap it up or they should just tie it in a way that it's temporarily not lying the right way, but it's still available. The mice of the Minyan in Chutzlarts is like the Ramah, not like the Shach. They give him a talus, but they actually take off one corner of the tzitzis. They leave them in there, but they take it off one corner and they passel it. Right? They I think nowadays a lot of people cut it. What do they do nowadays? Let's see if I made a note here. 1 second. They take it off one corner. Okay, I didn't make a note for myself how they take it off one corner. They take it off one corner. That's what they do in America nowadays. They take off one corner. Like the Ramah. In Israel, they have a different minhag, and we can see, no coffin. In Israel, they bring him out to the kever in a talus, but they don't bury him with the talus. They just carry him in the talus, and then when, right before they lower him to the kever, they take off the talus. That is the compromise they do in Eretz Yisrael. So that's the difference between minhagim and Eretz Yisrael, and that's because the Gemara says, you take him out in tzitzis. It doesn't explicitly say bury him in tzitzis. So they say, that's the chiluk. You take him out in tzitzis, but you bury him. Stam. So again, in Israel, they take him out in tzitzis, but then take it off as they put him into the kever. And you'll see, like, if you look at an Israeli funeral of a man, then, you'll see as they're putting him into the grave, right next to the kever, there's a talus there on the floor that they took off of him right before they lowered him into the kever. In America, that's not an option. He's in a coffin. In America, when the Kever Kedisha prepares the body, they give him a talus, but take off the tzitzis from one corner.
So because they never intend to bury him with it, it wouldn't be Aser
Manah. So it wouldn't be Aser Manah, correct. So it wouldn't be Aser Manah, because they only intended to put it on him temporarily. Even though, you know, that's somewhat debatable. In cases like this, where it's like clearly something that you wouldn't bury him in this country. The big question, which I'm not going to get into now, is, but a big debate in the modern poskim, what about a mace from America who they send him on the plane in a talus to Israel? That's a big debate in the modern poskim. I don't remember what the minhag is, but because when they put the talus on him in America, perhaps they intended to bury him with it, or at the very least it looked like they were going to bury him with it. So that's a big debate, what they do.
What do they do with the coffin?
Okay, that's just a shipping coffin that everyone knows is just for shipping. Then they use it for another mace. That's like the wheelbarrow, or that's like the bed they use in Israel to carry the mace. Yeah, that they reuse. That's clearly not intended to stick with him. The only thing is, whoever gave the talus in America may very well have intended that he'd be burying the talus, because they don't know the minhagim of Eretz Yisrael. And it could very well be they didn't know where they were going to bury him when they originally wrapped him up. So therefore, that's a... that's a bigger focus. You have to ask the Kever Kedisha here what the minhag is, because that gets tricky. But in Israel, then they just give, I think they give the talus back to the family. Like, it's not a Kever Kedisha talus. I think often they use his own talus and give it back to the family, or it's a Kever Kedisha talus, and then they use it for the next guy. Okay. That's about it for Shin Nun Aleph. Shin Nun Beis. This is the famous story, by the way, of Rabbi Gamliel, right? That in the days of Rabbi Gamliel, it's sort of funny how sometimes reality has its way, especially, I would say even better, money often has its way of trying to defeat Torah. In the days of Rabbi Gamliel, the funerals used to be very expensive. And to the point where the Gemara says that the funeral was a bigger tragedy for the family than the death, because it would totally bankrupt them. So what did Rabbi Gamliel do? And everyone said, oh, just have a simple funeral. Don't spend a lot of money. But it was pasnish, because all the neighbors spend money. So, you know, someone will say, my father died after all he did for me my whole life. I'm not going to give him as good a burial as the guy next door. And it became socially impossible. Just like nowadays, a lot of things in the firm community, people spend a lot of money they can't afford. I don't mean good things. Sometimes people spend a lot of money, sending their kids to yeshiva, learn Torah, and important things. Okay, great. But often people spend a lot of money on just social things to keep up with the Joneses. So that's against the Torah Hashkafa.
But the Goldschmidt.
Right, correct. Keep up with the Goldbergs, not the Joneses, correct? So it's a big plague in the modern-day firm community that, in some parts of the modern-day firm community, not in Meisharim, but in some parts of the modern-day firm community, truth is not in Olushvot either. I think less in Eretz Yisrael, but in some parts of the firm community nowadays, it's a big problem that people have to spend money they can't afford to keep up with the Goldbergs. So that was what happened. So Rebbe Gamliel say, he says, when I die, he wrote in his will, bury me in like plain shrouds that cost a dollar, that are not fancy. And once he did it, that already broke the ice. And then everyone, no, I'm not richer than Rebbe Gamliel. And then he saved all the Jewish people, and they made many takanos at the time to remember what a wonderful things he did. And Adayim Azeh, we say, in Korvamei Sechichim Yekarim, you're not allowed to bury in expensive shrouds the Afilin Nasi Mishrael, even the richest person, the Nasi. Why? Shah says, Tikkun Olam, because once the rich people do it, everyone else will have to keep up with the Goldbergs. It'll trickle down. If even the rich people do it cheap, then it won't pressure anyone else. The Shach points out, they don't have to be like frayed and ripped. They could be mechubed, just made of cheap materials. We add Nagu Likbar Begun and Levanim, even though there's a Gemara that some people have a different minhag. Our minhag is to use white shrouds. It might imply that the person is going to Gan Eden instead of Gehenim, because we say that if the person is Zoche in the Din of the Bez Shalmalo, they should be wearing white. But for whatever reason, the minhag is to use white. Not only that, Ramiam Liel was buried in plain linen clothing. Then the Gemara says there are others who used even cheaper canvas clothing of some sort. Nowadays, the minhag is to bury in linen shrouds. There are specific begudim that we bury in and linen shrouds. Why dafka linen? So the Pesach Tshuva here quotes from the Yalpit Ruveni, Alpisod. Okay, Alpisod, we bury dafka in linen. There are special minhagim of Jewish tachrichim, what we use, which are pretty cheap. Nothing fancy. But they're special white linen clothing, and they have no hem. And it's all linen, like even the thread they sew with is linen alpisod, and there's no hems, which is also alpisod. Okay, alpisod, there's special gut in the Chevron Kaddishas have a supply of them that they bury in. Of course, the principle of this is not just of gutim. The principle of this is that you shouldn't spend a lot of money on funerals. Right? So here's the tricky part. The Torah Hashkafa is to spend as little money as possible on funerals. Financial interests of the funeral industry is to spend as much money as possible on funerals. So in Eretz Yisrael, that's not an issue. You can't spend a lot of money on funerals because there's no funeral directors. There's no funeral homes. There's the Chevron Kaddisha. The Chevron Kaddisha, it's a flat fee and sometimes is paid for by your tab, by the taxpayer, etc. Depending on where, if you're a resident or not, I believe. But you can't. I mean, I'm not talking about buying the plot. But on the funerals, there's nothing to spend money on, really, in Eretz Yisrael. But in America, this is a big problem. They always try to get people to spend money. The Orthodox rabbis try to push the Torah Hashkafa by getting funerals to be cheaper. I know the OU has like a whole special initiative now to have clean funerals and not let the funeral directors try to convince people that everyone else needs, and you, of course, need this expensive thing. Okay, so the OU has something. You know what it's called? There's some project they started like a few years ago called some Hebrew word, where they made like a special deal with all the funeral, like they used clout with all the funeral homes to say like, if you want us to like approve your business and put you on our list and recommend you, then you have to offer this funeral service for this cost without any fancy things, without trying to rip people off and take advantage of them in their time of grief, etc. Okay, that's coming off. That's the modern day application of Rebbe Gamliel.
The Shach quoted an opinion that good to use nice clothing.
Yeah, achra yofe, but not chashuvim yosuvidai. It should be nice, it should be decent. But it should be nice, but not fancy. Yeah, no one's saying that you should use a broken coffin. Or that the coffin should be rotten. But it should be without anything fancy. Okay, the...
Also, is there anything in the kittel supposed to be to remind us of...
So we wear kittels on certain occasions. There's different opinions to why we wear kittels on certain occasions. Some people say it reminds us of shrouds. It's a plain white linen garment. I mean, our kittels aren't linen. Our kittels are cotton, but the same look. as linen. But that's a theory. It's not mocha. There are many other explanations why we wear kittel. And it's not even the best explanation. Like, it doesn't fit so well. Like, then why do we wear kittel on Tisha B'Av? Why do we wear kittel on the Pesach Seder if it reminds us of dying? So, okay, there's all kinds of varts, but it's not the Pashup Shat. And Yom Kippur, like, you know, we don't want to die. You know, that's the whole point. Yeah, sorry. Okay.
So, just right to the chapter talking about the building figures, the masons up. What do we say about when it was Chas Shalom, like, cremated? There's a mason.
What do we say if someone was cremated if there's Tchias HaMesim? So clearly if someone was cremated against their will, then that doesn't take away their Tchias HaMesim. Meaning, I'll let you in on a little secret. Even if someone was buried in the regular traditional fashion, after a couple of hundred years, they are as good as cremated, right? That's called, that's not modern science, right? That's Afar Kvaros, right? Because I'll tell us, they just turn into the chumash, he offer ata, he'll offer tashuv. You literally just decompose. I mean, as a matter of fact, we want the body to decompose, right? You have to bury them in a way that they'll decompose, not protect it, etc. At least in our modern day minhag. What about someone who chose to be cremated? Did they lose their tefillah mason? There's all different opinions about this, and maybe it's a useful thing to tell someone sometimes and rely on that opinion, but I'm not convinced.
What do we do with the Dark Yavasha quotes this Nemuke Yosef that you use Tachrifin Nine in the Meis Bechashuvim, that it's like your motive to Kias Mesem and that's Tovala Bracha? Is that again?
Yeah, so that's what the Shas says, that he doesn't really mean Nan Bechashuvim, he just means Yafin, like Mechubad, but not fancy.
Why doesn't the Ramah quote it here also? Why did he only bring it there and bring it here?
I'm not sure, unless he thought that maybe he thinks that the Gan Levanim is good enough to be Yotzei that. Or, so we just said, it's a good question. Okay, Gimel and Dalet are talking about Tara. There's something called Tara. The word Tara and the Iker of the Tara process does not appear in the Shulchan Aruch. There's some minhagim, even though they don't appear in the Shulchan Aruch, that are Iker minhagim, that are basic minhagim, that are non-negotiable. And there's something called the Tara. What is a Tara? The Chevra Kadisha, when someone dies, the Chevra Kadisha takes their body, and then the Chevra Kadisha delivered their body in Israel. The Chevra Kadisha does the burial. In America, the Chevra Kadisha delivers the body to the funeral home. What does the Chevra Kadisha do with the body? What mysterious things do they do between picking up the body and delivering the body in Israel to the Beis HaKvaros, or in America, to the funeral home? So there are whole books, handbooks from 100 years ago, and modern day handbooks in English, and every town has their own little, Xerox handbook they pass down from generation to generation, what the Chevra Kadisha does with the body. But one rule is, Gimel HaIsh, Eino Korach U'Mekasher Isha, V'l Isha Kareches U'Mekasheres HaIsh. A man is not allowed to put the clothing on a female cadaver, but a woman is allowed to on a male cadaver, because the difference between Yetzer Hara of men and women, we don't even gari Yetzer Hara in the men. The minhag nowadays, even though that's the halacha, the minhag nowadays is a little more strict than that, and the minhag nowadays is that every Chevra Kadisha has two teams, two lineups, not defense and offense, but male and female. If a woman dies, then there's the female lineup of the Chevra Kadisha. If a man dies, there's a male lineup of the Chevra Kadisha, and never the twain shall meet. That's all Chevra Kadishas have, two parallel teams nowadays. Theoretically, if someone was in, the wilderness, whatever, then they would follow the Shulchan Aruch. But the minhag is to be more machmir, and women deal with women, and men deal with men, and that's it. Dalet, what do you do with the mace? Matzimen einav shel mace, you close the mace's eyes, v'mniftach pei koshun l'chayav, and if the rigor mortis makes the mouth open, you tie the jaw shut, upok in the kavav, you stop up the orifices so that liquids don't ooze out, and that would be nivel. So after you wash him, b'minei b'samim, with various perfumes, so they take away the bad smell, the goes in sorrow, and you give him a haircut, v'tzi parnav, you cut his fingernails, make him look mechubad, mechubad, u'madichno, so hate him, chomakshni nachmiltum, and you wash him well, so that he'll be cleansed of any dirt, v'tachim rosh, v'esim trufos, v'kli pasos, galgos choshba olam, and this is not to make him look nice, this is al-pi sod, you wash his hair, or his head, with these eggs that were mixed in their shells, not scrambled and cooked, just scrambled. And why dafka an egg? Because an egg is round, and death is something that's part of the cycle of life. Galgal shechos v'olam. Okay, these are some of the minhagim. Nowadays, the exact minhagim of a Tara Each country has slightly different minhagim. In Israel, they do certain things. In America, they do different things. Each town has some minhagim. But the ikar is two things. A, to cleanse the mace and make the mace look nice, even though no one's going to look at him, but still to make him look nice, and to lie him out properly, like to straighten out his limbs. That's also a big part of the covenant, to straighten out his limbs. And the actual tara, it's not mentioned in the Shulchan Aruch, but it's a very, very considered an absolutely necessary minhag. The actual tara is to be metahir him from tumah. How are you metahir from tumah? Okay, you could dip the body in a mikvah. Oh, yeah, I know it's tumas mace, but from other tumas. But that's not the mainstream minhag. Okay, there's some chassidish rebbes, whatever, who, you know, they do a tara, they put the body in a mikvah. That's not the mainstream minhag. The mainstream minhag, as you might recall, there's something called tisha kabin, right? For a bal keri, if you can't go to a mikvah, you pour tisha kabin at once. That is the ikar part of the tara, that they're metahir him with tisha kabin of Mayim She'uvim, which also counts for Tahara in certain circumstances, and they have three people, and they pour it all at once, rather overlapping. It's a whole ritual how they do it. That's the Ikar, but Tahara is to make the body look nice, and in the right lie nicely, and everything closed that's supposed to be closed, and all washed and cleansed, and the Tahara, to be have this ritual Tahara, done. Again, there are some gedolim, they put them in a mikvah, but the normal minhag is with this tisha kabin, just like some people with Tfilas Ezra do tisha kabin, that tisha kabin. In addition, yes?
Why are you
talking? Alpisod. Halachically it doesn't apply, right? This is all alpisod. The other very important minhag, they mentioned a few places in the Shofar, Shomer of the Mace, but they don't actually see what the minhag of Shmira is. The other very important minhag is that we do Shmira of a mace. We consider not Shmira of a mace like in the old days. You could say in the time of the Gemara, what was Shmira of a mace? That an animal shouldn't come and eat him. Or even if he's in the house, the mice shouldn't come and eat him. But this Shmira of a mace is Alpisod, and for Kavod a mace, that a Jew should always be Shomer the mace. As a matter of fact, in the American funeral homes, sometimes the funeral home director is a guy. But he knows the Jewish client. So there are Jewish funeral homes. Generally, funeral homes are for certain religions. It's a Jewish funeral home, but the guy who runs it happens to be a guy. But he knows all the Jewish rituals, and, you know, he's just running the home. He could be a guy. So what happens? Sometimes he drives the hearse. So even when he drives the hearse, the minhag is that he knows enough about Judaism. He tells someone from the family to come in the hearse with him in the shotgun seat to be Shomer the mace. Because he knows, as a guy, he doesn't count for Shmira of the mace. So from the death until the burial, if possible, we have a Jew being Shomer the mace. Often you'll see an email will go out, or a WhatsApp nowadays, or whatever. You know, can any, you know, teenagers, college students, people of free time, volunteer to take a shift? People take shifts, and the minhag is that they say Tehillim, Le'iloi Nishmas the mace, when they are Shomer the mace. Okay, that's also very important. Kavod is to do Shmira on the mace. That would count for, well, here it's a little tricky, because it certainly would if it's covered on mace. The thing is, like, the Shomer and the mace in the old days seemed to be more, you know, their mom is Shomer the mace so that mice wouldn't eat him, or cats, or whatever. I know it sounds gross, but that's what would happen. Nowadays, the Shmir of the mace is more for kavod, so then you get into the question, maybe they could be Shomer of the mace and say a bracha, right? They don't have to, like, focus the whole time. They could be Shomer of the mace and say Kriyat Shema, because they're not guarding from, maybe they're guarding from Ruchos Ros, I don't know, but I'm sure.
But aren't there issues about, like, doing so?
So that depends how close you are.
Both in the same room, but aren't
right
there?
So if you're saying Tehillim for the kavod of the mace, that's one thing.
If you're on this shift, then you need to say Kriyat Shema, are you or not?
Right. Okay, good question. All right, let's come back to that before I give an answer without being 100% sure. Okay, that's the minhagim of Tara, and basically there are books with all the minhagim of a Tara.
Isn't it, like, I don't know, not so respectful maybe it's not right for a woman to,
I understand. That's why nowadays we're machmir, but it's not usher. Maybe she'll move into
full. I think why wouldn't that be like
cup? Okay, not that disrespectful. Yeah. Okay, let us skip.
Where's the Tara generally done?
The Tara's done. They have a room for Tara. The Chevra Kadisha has a room for Taras. So they have, like, they have a little, they have a headquarters, the Chevra Kadisha. They do the Taras there. You know, and they have special equipment. I mean, not so fancy. You know, they have some place to lie the mace down on, and they think the mace is always face up. They never, you know, they turn, rotate this and that side, never turn them over. All kinds of menhagim al pisot. And they have all the things they need. Okay. Let's skip to Shin Nun Zayin. Aser lehalin ha-mace. El imkein helino lechvodo lehavilo aron ve-tachrichen. You're not allowed to be melin et ha-mace. You're not allowed to leave the mace overnight, meaning you have to bury right away. That's a pasuk in the Torah. The pasuk in the Torah says, right, when you hang someone who's chayim mises bedin, lo talin nivlatol ha-eitz ki kavor tekberna bayomahu, A, a lo saseh, not to leave overnight, and B, a mitzaseh, to bury him on that day. There's a big debate among the poskim. Is the aseh and the lav, or one and not the other and not one, only about Harugei Bezdin, or about all Jews? Lemaisa, we assume that Harugei Bezdin is just like the, is just the, Zubin Tzorch Lomazu, is the Chiddush, even Harugei Bezdin, you have an Isser of Halanas Hameis, and a mitzvah of Pura. Kol Shekein for a regular Jew who didn't do anything wrong, you have to be mechabit even more than Harugei Bezdin. Or at least as much, rather, as Harugei Bezdin. So therefore, we assume it's actually a lo saseh to not bury a mace on that day, and a chiyuv aseh midoraisa to bury a mace right away. It, clearly, it's also to bury them. Klal is a mitzvah aseh. If you don't bury them, you violate the mitzvah aseh forever. Even if you don't bury them that day, you still violate the mitzvah aseh. There's a big debate in the poskim. Exactly what time does this kick in? There's also a big debate. What if it's already the second day? Is there another Isser to wait for the third day? Or like once you violate, you violate it? Also, like what counts as overnight? Right? Is the Isser at Alos? Is the Isser at Seis? Is the Isser to like not bury that day and wait till the night? Or no, the Isser's that day or night. The Isser is to wait till the next morning. Here there are many different opinions of the postkin. I'm not going to go through them because we'll see that in modern day reality, it is not so... it is not so Nugiel Maisa, but the Pesachei Tshuva quotes from the Radvaz that you violated Alos HaShachar. Meaning, it's mutter to wait till the middle of the night. It's only usher to wait till the next day. So if someone dies at 9 a.m., you can wait till 2 a.m. to bury them. As long as you don't wait to the next day. The Gesher Chaim, though, thinks that here it's not so clear. There are two ways to take this. Radvaz says that you're over what if he dies at night? Is it only us who may lend him the whole night? Or is it still us to leave until Alos HaShachar? Right? So, the Gesher Chaim says, Mestaber, you are... What if the guy dies at 4 a.m. and Alos HaShachar is 4:30? There is going to be a lot to leave until 4:30. Mestaber, no, it means if he died during the day, you can't leave him all night. So here the Gesher Chaim says, Rak im helino kol halayla. Although, there are those who are misopic about that. There is another opinion, Agav Beginas Radim, says no, you're over at Seisar Kochavim. The answer isn't to wait till the next day. It's to not bury that day and wait till the nighttime. The Shagas Arya thinks actually that they are both true, that that there's a he's mechalking the lav and the assay. The assay is by Yom Hahu, not to wait till, I shouldn't say Seisar Kochavim, really Shkia is how we're machmer nowadays, right? But the lav is Lo Tullin only all night, so the Shagas Arya says, Tzvei Dinim. He says, you violate the Asay at Seis, or now the Shdiel, we are Machter for Seis, and you violate the Lav at Alos. Okay. Lemaisa, there's not such an Afkamina. Why is this not such an Afkamina? Because it's clear in the Gemara that the reason for this Isser is. What's the reason for this Isser, by the way? What's the reason for the Isser? Now, it's funny. If you read the Pasuk, what might you think? Lo salin lo sal leitz ki kavortik read about yamahu ki kil lasal kim taloi. Someone finished the pasuk for me. Someone who's not makbin on bal peh. What? Velo sitami sad mascha shersham lokechem usein lachanechala. That was a test. If no one can finish the pasuk, then I can finish it however I want, and no one will catch me.
Velo sitami
sad mascha. You might think it has to do with tumas haaretz. And here you have a big machlokes in the mefarshim. Is it because of tuma, meaning tumas meis, right? To have too much tumas meis, or is it because of bizayon hameis? Ki kilulas elokim koloi. What does kilulas elokim toloi mean? However many mefarshim and chumash you can think you can name, there's that many pshatim. But one of the pshatim Rashi says is it's a bizayon to Hashem that a man would be so disrespected, who was created to tell Elohim, be so disrespected as to be left hanging on a tree and not buried. Right? So is it because of Bizoyan Mace, which might be Kilas Elohim Toloi? Or is it because of Tumas Mace, not to have Tuma around? I mean, even the body, the Tuma's around, but I guess it's only a certain locale. Lot Hamase on Moscha. Here, the Ramban famously says that in Chutz Laretz is only Bizoyan Mace, but in Eretz Yisrael there's also an Inyan of Tuma. Halachically, we assume not that way. Halachically, we assume the reason is only because of Bizayon HaMeis. And therefore, what's an afkamin? If the reason is for Bizayon HaMeis, then it's usher to leave him hanging stam. But if it's for his kava, then it's mutter. And that's how we paskin. Elam kein helino lichvodo. Unless you are leaving him for his own kava. What's the example of kava? The Gemara says, l'habil orim tachrichim. Right? Before modern transportation, you didn't have Arum Tachrichim around, so you had to wait till you ordered it for the next town. Omekonados, or the wailing women, or nowadays we would say, I don't know, the rabbi Darshan at the masvid for the funeral. Oh, even though this is not in the Gemara, but it's in the Masechta Smachos, the Yeshiva of Krovim, or for his relatives to come to honor him at the funeral. Or Lashmi Ayaros, to tell people in nearby towns to come and to come to the funeral and mourn for him. Okay, so if it's for his kavod, it's mutter. That is why the minhag in America is. That is why the minhag in America is. By the way, that's the second reason why we try to avoid autopsies. One is if nivel ameis to cut him open, and number two, it takes a long time, and it's lo sullen. Yeah, it's not our fault if the government does it, but we try to be mekayim yaseik for it to grant by yomahu. So if we can do it right away, we prefer to do it right away. Anyway, that's why the minhag in Chutz Laaretz is that. We don't rush to bury. I mean, we rush to bury, but we only rush to bury if we have time to schedule the funeral at a time that everyone can come and for the relatives to fly in from wherever they are. That's the mainstream minhag in Chutz Laaretz. There are exceptions. The mainstream minhag in Chutz Laaretz is that you bury as soon as you can schedule a funeral for a convenient place and time and the relatives can come in. Not convenient for convenience, but because you want a lot of people to come. You know, if 50 people come to the funeral or 200 people come to the funeral, that's a big difference in Kavod HaMeis, that's Lashmi Ayaros. And therefore, often it takes 2 days or so till we bury in Chutz Laaretz because it's Lechvodo.
Assuming all these other considerations are not there, is there any Inyan to rush it earlier in the day before?
Yes, that's Sif Beis. Kol HaMeisim HaMamar L'Hotzi Mitotzah Reza Meshuvach. On all people who die, if you do the funeral quickly, it's more Meshuvach. However,
during the funeral itself,
no. The assumption is even scheduling the funeral. However, I love the ima raising a gunah. But on parents, it's improper. Elokei Erev Shabbos Erev Yom Tov, which you show himself when you tasso, unless it was raining on him or Erev Shabbos Erev Yom Tov. So it's also during the funeral. But the poskim seem to assume it's also beforehand. Now, therefore, it's good to not drag it out too long. But for of the emo, when you want to have a lot of hespedim, you want to prepare extra, so there's an inyan to wait a little longer. Maybe also, that's not what poskim say, like, you don't want to let them go, so. Anyway, but lemaisa, in Eretz Yisrael, interestingly, there's a different minhag. And this seems to have to do with los atamis ha'aretz. There's some people who say, maybe halachically there's no heter of halona lechvodu in Eretz Yisrael. Los atamis ha'aretz. That's not accepted halachically. Halachically, we forget about Tuma. Halachically, it's only Bizayon HaMeis, and Eretz Yisrael and Chutz Laaretz are the same. However, in Eretz Yisrael, there are two levels. There is Yerushalayim, Ir HaAtika, and there's the rest of Israel. In Yerushalayim, there's a Takana D'Rabbanan, a Malinus HaMeis, Yerushalayim Bechlal. So you cannot leave a mace overnight in the Ir HaAtika, under any circumstances. Okay, but, I mean, nowadays the hospitals aren't in Eretz Yisrael anyway, and the moors aren't in Eretz Yisrael, so it's not a big deal. In Eretz Yisrael, the minhag Eretz Yisrael, to try to minimize halanas hameis, even lechvodo, it's not 100%, but clearly the minhag in Eretz Yisrael, like those who are makban on the minhag of Eretz Yisrael, always bury that day, if possible. You know, sometimes it's not. If it's an hour before Shabbos, and there's not enough time, you have to wait till Matzei Shabbos, not Sunday. But in Eretz Yisrael, you'll notice people generally get buried right away. Mamash usually on the same day. If it is late in the day, that night, they have no problem burying it at midnight in Eretz Yisrael. I've been to lots of levayas mamish at 11 p.m. or midnight, generally on a Matzei Shabbos. You know, if it's Matzei Shabbos, then guy dies on Shabbos, then they'll make his, they won't wait till Sunday morning. Because funeral midnight Matzei Shabbos. Why? Because first everyone needs to call everyone after Shabbos, tell them to come, they need to drive there, they have a condition to prepare their body. But mamish, someone dies on Shabbos, if it's the summer, they'll make the funeral at midnight and people come out at midnight. Obviously, less people are going to be there at midnight than if you had it the next day. But in Eretz Yisrael, the minhag is to, the main minhag Eretz Yisrael is, even though it's mutal halanos hameis lechvodo, we are sensitive to los hatameis haaretz, and we are also sensitive to cover, you know, to that it's a special kavod hameis to not be mutamei the aretz. And in Eretz Yisrael, it's considered more of a kavod hameis to bury right away, even if you have to forgo the relatives coming from chutz laaretz, even if you have to forgo a big crowd at the levaya, even if there will be 30 people in the levaya instead of 300. And I've been told by a lot of people at midnight also, then the real Eretz Yisrael is to bury right away and not take advantage of this kula. However, that's not a halacha, like you might think from reading Rabban Torah. It's just a minhag, and therefore it depends on the circumstances. Some people are more makban in this Eretz Yisrael, some people are less makban in this Eretz Yisrael. If someone wants an Eretz Yisrael to delay the funeral, there was a, as a matter of fact, there was a gadol who passed away recently in Eretz Yisrael, and I was very surprised, as he comes from the most, like, you know, real old, you know, Eretz Yisrael minhag families, and they made the levaya the next day, no?
Yeah.
Did they not? So because they wanted a lot of people to come to show kavod, okay, maybe there was some sensitive situation where they wanted to make sure that they would show a proper kavod. So that shows that the minhag Eretz Yisrael is not 100%. You're allowed to make exceptions based on the circumstances. You know, it's you're allowed to use your judgment. Even the most chashiv Yeshuva Yeshan families will still use their judgment, but the general minhag Eretz Yisrael is not to delay.
Were you the Catholic and the person is the Tzalim Elokim, so if you leave him, it's like kill off Elokim, it looks like you're talking Hashem, then why would you be able to do it even for Kavod HaMeis? It would still look denigrating to
No, but it could be that if you're only doing it to mechaved him, then it doesn't look denigrating.
If it's like hanging, really,
the pasuk's talking about hanging, but you know, but you would say that a little bit of this applies even to normal cases. Agav, the I'm not going to go through all the discussions here in the Achronim, but there's a big machlokes in the pasuk Chuvos of Katan Aleph. How about a nafel? Just two important issues. How about a nephel? Is there an isser of losalin on a nephel? Because after all, a nephel is not a full person, even though they obviously partake of the species. So he quotes here Magen Avraham, who says very clearly in Chizyantiv that there's an isser losalin on a nephel, but all the other poskim disagree. All the other poskim disagree, all the later achronim disagree with that Magen Avraham, and they all assume that, no, the Isser of Lo Sullen only applies to a full person. A Nafel is Tumah's space. Obviously, you can't leave a Nafel around someplace where it could be married at Tumah, but there's no formal din of Kvura and Lo Sullen on a Nafel. It is just practically, you know, you have to make sure that you don't leave the Tumah.
To clarify, when you're saying Marga Tumah, you're saying that as like literal Tumah, not
literal Tumah, correct. Like especially for Kohanim, even Bisman Azeh. Right? I mean, you can't just stop and leave a nephel in the building.
Meaning Marvat Tumah Be'eretz is not a special thing of like metaphysically not having Tumah here.
That's not binding like, halachically, correct. Okay. That's one thing. And the other thing I'll point out is the whole discussion of the Piskei Tshuva in Sivkatan Gimel. How about the Matar Guna? if you're not exactly sure who to identify him, can you be mishad the mace in order to identify him? Let's say you think you know who he is, but you're not sure, and you want to be mafter his wife aguna, or so his kids will say kaddish. So there is a discussion. The meaning nowadays is that usually we can identify people quickly because we have modern technology. But we would be mishaya someone to identify them because we consider that's part of their kavod, that their kids should attend the funeral and say kaddish.
This difference in minhag between chutzlars, is it the same thing in terms of burying at night? Like, if chutzlars bury at night, they don't bury it.
In chutzlars, they don't bury at night. I was never sure if that's a minhag or a union rule of the gravediggers. It might be a minhag because there are no rush. They bury during the day.
It's the same thing since they're...
Yeah. But in Israel, everyone buries at night. Okay. Shin, Nun, Ches, I just want to look at the end a little. The last few lines, you see at the end of Shin Nun Ches, right before the Shach Sifkat and Dalet, right? Shach Sifkat and Dalet is between the words Likvaros and Mamidim. So start six words before that. Yesh Omrim. Shemagiyim em hames likvaros, when you go to the cemetery with the mace, meaning not in the Hesbedim, but in the cemetery, mamino sokol dalet amos kodosh nekbar, you stop every dalet amos on the way, you stop. V'cheinogu e'inna lemi beiz v'gon palmin. He says, in the Ramaz days, they didn't have that minute to stop every dalet amos. Could be a lot of stops if it's a big cemetery. But three or four times they stop. Two or three times. Kodosh omer l'tzidigadin, before they say the tzidigadin, v'yam she'inom l'tzidigadin, ain't tzidig lamino so. But in a day, meaning a holiday, when you don't say Tzedek HaDin, right, there are days when you don't say Tzedek HaDin because it's, Hanukkah or Purim or Shkodesh, something like that, then you don't have to stop. Why? So the Lavush explains, because the reason for this minute of stopping is to be Mavriach the Ruos Ros. There are Shadim that try to follow this fellow into the Kever and cause him problems, and you stop, and that somehow scatters them. I don't know enough so to understand exactly how it works. So you stop two or three times on the way. You have Riach Ruchos Ros on days which are regular whole days, but on special days like Yom Rosh Chodesh, etc., then the Ruchos Ros don't have power because of the kedusha of those days, and therefore you don't have to do this. Okay, nowadays we don't have this exact minhag, but there are different minhagim in Eretz Yisrael and Chutzlart. In Eretz Yisrael, the minhag is they stop however many amount of times the Chevra Kadisha decides. There's no fixed amount of time, and they say certain things every time they stop, and then the Yosom says Kaddish. So they say, Akav Yibin Ma'alalal, and Huracham Yichaper Avon, say a Maimra and some Sukkim, and then the Avol says Kaddish, and they do this a couple times on the way. I guess that's like their MO. He says two or three times, Lav Dafka. They do this a few times on the way. They just, everyone carrying the mace, they stop. The Chevra Kadisha guy says, Akav Malala Omer, and Bukurachim Yichaper Avon, and then tells the Yisomim to say Kaddish, or someone else, whoever's there, if there's no Yisomim, say Kaddish, say Kaddish. That's the minhag in Chutzlars. In Eretz Yisrael, in Chutzlars, the minhag is to Dafka stop seven times, I'll be sowed, and that each time they stop, like between each stop, the people walking there say Yosef Seser Elyon. If you notice, what is Yosef Seser Elyon actually about? It's about Hashem protecting us from Ruchos Ros. They say Yosef Seser Elyon, and the first time everyone says Yosef Seser Elyon, and until the words Ki Malachav stops at Ki, then they stop. You know, you try to keep up with the guy leaving the procession, the rabbi. Then they stop. Then they go again. You say until Ki Malachav. Okay, those were very makba and not they stop and stuck in the middle. I guess should just finish it. And then the third time Ki Malachav Yitzave. And the fourth time until Ki Malachav Yitzave Lach. And the fifth time until the Shmorcha. And the sixth time until Bechol. And the seventh time until Brochecha. They never finish Vinyanoam. And that's the minhag of having a Riach Leruchos in America. Okay, so in America, in between each stop, they say Vinyanoam until that Pasuk. And stop seven times.
They pick, while they're walking?
Yeah, while they're walking, they say, they start Yosef Seser Elyon, etc., till Ki, and then they stop. That's why you have to keep up with the rabbi's pace. Then, in Israel, they don't say anything while they're walking, or some people say Yosef Seser while they're walking, but that's not connected to the meaning of stopping. In Israel, they generally don't say anything while they're walking. They just walk, then they stop, then the rabbi says a Maimer and a Pasuk, and the Avilim say Kaddish, and then they go again. Okay. In Israel, in America, they do not say Kaddish till after the Kuruta funeral. In Israel, they say Kaddish at the Beit HaSpedim, at the funeral home, quote unquote, and every time they stop. So they'll have a couple of Kaddishes even before the Kuruta in Israel. It's all a matter of Minhagim. Shin Nun Tes. Shin Nun Tes. This is a big issue. Makam shenogu latzis nashim lifnei mita yotzos. Makam shenogu latzis la'acher mita yotzos. Va'achshem nagu she'in yotzos la'acher mita ve'in l'shanos. And Gemara said, it says, in place where the women work first, that's a good minhag. In place where the women work last, that's a good minhag. Seems to be part of the reason here is to prevent mingling. And he says in our days, the women walk last in the funeral procession. Okay, but Beis, Yeshlam Noah, this is based purely on Sod, based on a Zohar. Yeshlam Noah, me lots this nation, of course, Acharamita. Means even Acharamita, when the minhag is that women do the funeral procession, they walk at the end, therefore the men are in front, women are in the back, they don't mingle. But that's only till they get to the cemetery. But women shouldn't go to the cemetery because al pi sod, it can lead to all kinds of bad things. We understand that, I mean, basically, al pi sod, women shouldn't go to the cemetery for the same reason women don't say tachta, right? Because a woman, al pi sod, represents more the sad of din, a man represents the sad of rachamim, and you never want to combine al pi sod, you never want to have like two things that represent din together. Because that could be a scabrous hadinim and could be dangerous. So cemetery is obviously a makom of din. Ein lecha din gedol mizo. Right, dayon ha'emes. And women are din, so you don't want women in the cemetery because it's too much din. There could be all kinds of bad things. I'll be sowed. This is controversial. The machaber is very clear, but if you look on the fine print here, says the Beis Lechem Yehuda, according to Beis Yaakov, v'chiyach min ha'gemar she'ein lemdo adash lech Beis HaKoros. Not true! There's no problem with women going to a cemetery. No, what's the problem with quoting halachas from Zohar? The problem with quoting halachas from the Zohar is that the Zohar is sowed, and it's very complicated to figure out exactly what it means. Almost every time you have one of the Mechaber or Magen Avraham or someone quoting a halacha from a Zohar, you'll have the Gemara or someone else saying, look, you gotta do what it says in the Zohar, but that's not what the Zohar meant. This is what the Zohar meant, because there's different ways to interpret the Zohar, and if you actually look at the Zohar inside, he doesn't say it quite that way. He says, if certain things happen, if you look at them in a certain place afterwards, then something bad might happen. He doesn't say it's bad for women to go to the cemetery. Okay, Ad Hayom Hazeh, there are different minhagim. In some communities, al pi sod, women do not set foot in the cemetery. And in some communities, nothing to do with tznius, just al pi sod. In some communities, women do go to the cemetery. So you should follow the minhag of your community. Obviously, if you're in a Leviah where all the other women don't go to the cemetery, you should tell your wife, don't go to the cemetery, not to violate the Minhag HaMakom. Okay, so that there are two legitimate opinions, each of them based on Pshat in the Zohar. I am fundamentally unqualified to tell you, not only because I'm not on the Madrega of these other Gedolim who are arguing, but because of my ignorance of the Mechla, you know, of the proper framework and my lack of Bikias in Zohar, I certainly have no intelligent opinion about who is the right shot in the Zohar, so I'll leave it up to local minhag. When it comes to women going to a cemetery, there's another issue, which is can pregnant women go to a cemetery or not? Can pregnant women go to a cemetery or not? This is a tricky one. At the very least the day I was born, you know, in my lifetime there's been a publishing explosion. Right, so everything's written in some safe or someplace. But I'm fairly confident that, you know, the day I was born, there was no written safer of Judaism anywhere that says pregnant women shouldn't go to cemeteries. Again, I'm sure by now you can find it in a thousand Sfarim because, you know, there have been a million Sfarim written and they quote every minhag that anyone ever heard. But in the old days, it was never written anywhere that pregnant women should go to cemeteries. But it was this minhag that women told women that if you're pregnant, you shouldn't go to cemeteries. And then there became a big debate in the modern day poskim. In the Monday postkin, you know, all of a sudden they said, well, in none of our male books does it say pregnant women shouldn't go to cemeteries, but all the women tell the women that if they're pregnant, they shouldn't go to cemeteries. So what does this mean? Does it mean Minhag Yisrael is kadosh, and in Lo Nevi'osein, B'nei Nevi'osein, right? Just like a woman could be a Navi, Devora, so women's minhagim could be also in Lo Nevi'osein, the B'nei Nevi'osein. Or do we say, no, it's just of old wives' tales, and just as a bunch of women decided that, doesn't make it a proper binding minhag. Okay, different poskim have different opinions about this. So I think any minhag if you want to follow the minhag that pregnant women should avoid cemeteries, then that would be appropriate. If you want to follow those poskim who say it's not a real minhag, it's just a superstition, and pregnant women can go to cemeteries, that would also be appropriate. I think, looking around, the most common minhag is that pregnant women do not go to cemeteries in all the circles I've checked. Now, again, it doesn't mean that they can, quote-unquote, go to a cemetery. It means they can actually go inside the cemetery. right? They go outside the cemetery and look. They just can't go inside the cemetery. No one knows what the reason for this minhag is, because it started as a minhag, and then all of a sudden the postman discovered it. Some people say the reason is that when Mashiach comes, they want to be able to have a baby who will work for, and who will be tahor and draw water for the paraduma. That's a bit of a far... I think Michal Yitzchak suggested this theory. That's a bit of a far-fetched theory, perhaps. Other people say it's sakana. Someone goes to a cemetery and she sees all these people who died. She might be so distraught and chas v'shalom miscarry. Others say, no, it's a spiritual sakana. There's the kokos atumah and death in the cemetery. So you and I are strong men who go into the cemetery. No, well, kokos atumah won't harm us. But a developing fetus has a very weak life force, and those kokos atumah and death could chas v'shalom lead to a miscarriage. So some people say it's sakana, some people say it's ayin hara. After all, if someone just died and now she's pregnant and having a baby, then that could lead to an ayin hara. All these people died and you get a baby, why do you get to have a baby and they didn't get to live? So it could lead to ayin hara chas v'shalom, which is obviously more dangerous for a pregnant woman than even for a regular person, just because pregnancy is more delicate than a regular guy just living another 9 months. Anyway, no one knows exactly what the reason is.
What about Atu Aishas Kohen?
Some people say, well, even Aishas Kohen, according to most folks, is much to go to cemetery. We're not going to get into that yet. Maybe it's just, you're right, maybe so that the Yisrael's wife shouldn't go in, so the Kohen's wife doesn't come in, which according to some poskim could be an Isser, for a Kohen's wife to go to cemetery and be Matami the fetus. That depends if the fetus is Mekabel Tomah or not. Anyway, Lemaisa, no one knows what the reason is, no one knows if it's a binding minute or not. The most common minhag is that pregnant women don't go to cemeteries, and if it's like something very, someone very close, at the yard side of their very close relative or a funeral, someone very close, they'll go outside the cemetery, and they'll just look into the cemetery. That's the most common minhag. The question is always, what if someone is just took a pregnancy test, and she doesn't want everyone to know she's pregnant? So, okay, if it's some stranger, then say to her, but if it's clear, sometimes it's obvious that if the married woman and she doesn't go to the cemetery and it's, it would be socially appropriate for her to go, everyone will know she's pregnant. So what do you do in those cases? Lemaisa, I think that if someone is not afraid of the sakana subjectively, and they don't want to make a scene and they're embarrassed or for whatever reason, then they can be makel, especially since if the reason is because of ayin hara, then if you're not visibly pregnant, no one can give you an ayin hara. And, you know, maybe until Hooker Uber, maybe it's different. Anyway, Lemaisa, I think that there's room for someone to be makel, A, if they just want to follow that minhag, or if in that circumstance they feel a need to, and as long as they don't feel like they're going to get into sakana, then they won't be harmed. But everyone should follow their own minhag.
Is there a discussion about children or babies?
There does not seem to be a discussion of babies. I mean, most people don't bring babies to cemeteries just because, like, it's not decorous. But I don't think there's like an actual minhag not to. I mean, you often shouldn't bring babies to cemeteries for the same reason you shouldn't bring them to shul, because they're going to disturb, and it's supposed to be a serious atmosphere. But I don't think there's any problem. If they're not going to disturb, I have not heard a minhag against it.
Do the poskim have the same discussion when it comes to kibbutz adikim, or that's like?
I don't know. It could be the kibbutz adikim are different. Maybe they don't have kol tzatoma, etc. Now, the poskim say that Kohanim go to Kibbutz Tzaddikim, that's already not mainstream Orthodox Judaism. But the, I don't know what the minhag is, but it could very well be the minhag is for pregnant women to go to Kibbutz Tzaddikim, and that would make perfect sense. Okay, but I'm not a bucky on Kibbutz Tzaddikim. Sometimes I go to Kibbutz Tzaddikim, but I just wasn't taught to appreciate it on a deep enough level.
Tomorrow.
Just on a surface level.
Tomorrow.
Okay, without getting into that, yes. That's not what I meant, though. I meant I also go to the regular kind of kibbutz that become. That's their Shlomo Zalman. But I'm not against. That's not what I meant. I meant like big rabbis. Shin Samach. We will skip for now. On Shin Samach Aleph is a little tricky. It's a little challenging because it's one of these simanim Shulchan Aruch that we don't seem to be very machped on nowadays, and it even seems perhaps a little impractical. Shin Samach Aleph, Vatlan Talmud Torah Lo Tzas HaMeis, right? Meaning fundamental value judgment, should you learn Torah or should you go to a funeral? They're both mitzvos. The answer is, going to a funeral overrides Talmud Torah. For who? L'man D'masi L'Achirim, for teacher of Torah, Ein Lo Shira, Fili Yishmo Kama, Lofim Esbat Lo Shfilo. For a Rebbe, then no matter how many people he has, you should go to the funeral. I was only once at a funeral with more than 600,000. Was anyone else there?
Ravadia.
I don't know if there was another funeral in my lifetime with more than 600,000. I mean, I don't know, China or someplace, you know, if the leader of North Korea passed away, they probably made everyone go. But I'm saying in the Jewish world. I only heard of one funeral in my lifetime with more than 600,000. I don't think there were more than 600,000 at Moshe Feinstein. I was there, but I don't think there were more than 600,000. There were a ton. It looked like there were an infinite number of people, because as far as you saw, there were people. But I don't think there were that many Jews around. Ravadia, I think, was 800,000. Which is a little crazy, if you think about it. There are only 8 million people in the whole country, which means one out of every 10 Israeli people in Israel went to the Levaya. Keep in mind that a lot of the people are Goyim, right? They're Arabs and other Goyim. There are a lot of women and children who live far away who weren't going to go to the funeral. There are people who lived like in a lot in Kiryat Shmona who like it was impossible for most people to make it. And still 800,000 people came. I don't know, it's really the biggest Kavod HaTorah I've ever seen in my life. Again, not that it's a numbers game, and not that, clearly, might does not make right, and numbers do not make right, but in terms of kavod, to just say, look, you know, there's a whole Middle East here, there's a lot of people doing a lot of things, and 800,000 people never showed up to their levaya. I thought it was a tremendous kavod HaTorah. And, you know, obviously appropriate, for, Ru'uyin Hadvarim, for Rav Avadia. I think it was supposed to be one of those 800,000. Okay, but the only time I've ever seen this halacha put into play, even if there's already 600,000, if it's someone who taught Torah, you should still go. Okay? So, I was probably one of the first 600,000, but even if I hadn't been, I was coming from walking distance. You didn't take a drive or take a bus from here to Rav Avadia's Levaya. What?
Was it in Harnov?
It was in Sanhedrin or something. Anyway, no, it wasn't quite that far, whatever. Anyway, it was like an hour walk, but that was a lot quicker than any other means of transportation at the time. There's always room for another guy to walk down the street. Anyway, Victor, okay. The Mandakar Vitani, how about someone who learned Tanakh and learned Torah Shabbal Peh, who knows Torah Shabbat Tav and Torah Shabbal Peh? It's clear from the Ramah later it means even Torah Shabbat Tav or Torah Shabbal Peh. Daim Shakar Vashana, he learned Mikra and learned Mishnayas or Gemaras or Halachas. Vadain Lashon Kaminim, but didn't teach. Imyeshi Shemribon Sarkas Vazar Filo. Okay, then you only have to go for the first 600,000. Why? The Torah was given with 600,000 people in the audience. So therefore, when it goes back up to heaven, you should have 600,000 people. One, the low card of Tani. How about someone who did not learn Torah, doesn't know Torah? Then, then, you don't have to leave the matters to go to his funeral, as long as there's enough people to carry the body. It's not enough to carry, you need a minion, and they say she could say Kaddish. Right? So then you only have to go to make the minion. This happens sometimes, by the way. Someone's died, you hear someone died who's mamish, nothing from nothing, etc., never learned, but they don't have a minion. Okay, so then even if you're learning Torah, you have to go make a minion. This happened to me once. I was my wife's grandfather's wife passed away. My wife's grandfather's wife, meaning second wife, who was not, and she lived in Florida. Her kids lived in Florida. They had a levaya there, but the burial was in Queens. So she was not Karin Vitani. She was a very, very sweet person, but not particularly religious. And we had a minion, right? Driving on the way to the cemetery at 8, and I managed to think of everyone I knew who lived in Queens, and we had 11, actually, by the time we got there. So it's a big mitzvah to be the minion. But more than a minion, then you don't need to be involved until you're learning. Says, but nowadays we're talking at least within the firm community, everyone learns something. You know, we live in a different era where there's a little more learning and people are literate, etc. So therefore, you should be involved up to 600,000. Okay, a woman learned as much Torah as she was chayef to. So does that count? Or does that not count? She didn't learn Torah, but she learned whatever she was supposed to, which is nothing, just to do the mitzvos. Then there's a machlokas. V'cheinagu be'isha v'tinok b'chula, and we are makel by isha or a tinok who is too little to learn. V'eim avat n'tamal torah l'meishi isha m'lishat asimu kol tzorka el osu b'torah. And therefore, If it's someone who's not Kari Katani, as long as there's a minion, then you learn Torah. You don't have to go check. As long as you know there's someone who's going to take care of something, then you should keep learning. However, this is no matter an adult learning. Kids learning in Cheder, they were not Mevatalim even for Binyan Beis HaMikdash, and the postings assume that likewise, if not even for Binyan Beis HaMikdash, they're not for a funeral either. Okay, but what it comes out here, that, forget about the minion, Stam person is not a Zeh, 600,000 people have to go, which means you always have to go. Not to mention the fact that if they're ready, even more than 600,000, which is, again, once in a lifetime kind of thing. And that's if you're learning Torah. When do you have to be Mevatal Talmud Torah? At the Levaya. But in between the Levaya, when it's Meso Muta Lefanav, in Mevatal Shul Talmud Torah, then you don't have to be Mevatal Talmud Torah. Ah, so who's going to take care of the body? If there's Chevra Kadishas in the city. In the old days, there was no special Chevra Kadisha. Just anyone who wanted to volunteer, and they would divvy up the days. Nowadays, it's a little different. The Chevra Kadisha volunteers to do all the days. What if they're not available? Okay, the Chevra Kadisha has twice as many people as necessary, and usually, and they make sure they always have enough people available. Then, okay, as long as you're not in the Chevra Kadisha, then you're mutter. If you're in your Chevra Kadisha, then they'll call you, and you'll go take care of the mace. Okay, he says, but what about the Levaya? Forget the Chevra Kadisha. I'm not in the Chevra Kadisha. What about the Levaya? Levaya, that's only if you're learning. It depends what the regular person. If you're working, then you always have to go to the Levaya, no matter if the person was Kari Vitani or not. Everyone has to leave work. It's only in Kolal that you only have to leave for Kari Vitani. It's not relevant nowadays. There'd be no Chevra Kadisha. It would just be a talent, a few Jews, and no one was in charge. Then everyone would have to stop working until they organize volunteers to go do the Chevra Kadisha stuff. But learning, if you're learning, could stay learning. Okay, bottom line, what does this mean? This means that everyone at work always has to go to every funeral, and even everyone learning has to go to almost every funeral practically. The obvious kasha is that that's not what we do. There is a Netziv, the Divrei Sofrim here. Sorry, quotes from the Netziv.
The question is not just it's not what we do, it just doesn't seem practical even.
Even in the old days, forget what we do, like, then, you see, it might have been more practical once upon a time, without modern communication and with smaller cities, etc., how often did you hear about a funeral? You know, if you live in the shtetl, when everyone in the shtetl dies, everyone should go. You know, and what if someone died in the next shtetl? By the time you heard about it, the funeral was over. So, and you didn't have cities where a million people lived, right, because there were no apartment buildings, etc.,
but it still has a concept. I mean, like, that is a concept in saying that if we could all know, then we all should go, which is, like, just
yes.
Very...
So the Hemek... Right, so the Netziv and the... It's a good kasha. The Netziv and the Hemek Sheila, Simon Yud Dalet, Sifkat and Beis, and Simon Lama Dalet, Sifkat and Beis. And he quotes some other achronim. He says, even though that's not what it sounds like in the Mechaber... He's Medayi from Rishonim, that maybe, even though it's a big Chiddush, maybe these dinim really only apply, which are Gemaras, if you actually see the mace. But if you don't see the mace, then you're not Chayim. So the Divrei Sofrim says we must hold like the Netziv, who says that these Chiyim are only if you see the mace, but if you hear about the mace, then you're not Chayim. And therefore, halacha lemaisa, obviously not everyone's chayav to go to every funeral, but, you know, given that the pshat of the Mechaber in many Rishonim is that you're chayav to go to every funeral in the world, even though it seems to be a little impossible, therefore one should definitely try to make an effort to attend funerals when possible, even though we're mekel that maybe the Gemara really only meant you have to go if you actually see the mace.
I
think you have to use your judgment. I think you have to use your judgment. But if it's a suffix, whether it be matriach yourself and inconvenience yourself, you should go to the funeral.
Should we go to every funeral of anyone we know?
No, you have to use your judgment. I mean, look, if hardly anyone you know ever dies, then yes. But we're not all Zohar for that Madrega. But you have to use your judgment. But you see, you definitely see that there's a big tzad to be mechai yourself to go to funerals. You shouldn't be lazy. Yeah, because of Rebbe might be like a parent in some ways, right? Someone teaches Torah, yes. But again, you know, in Yerushalayim, Halavai, everyone should live forever, right? Or Meva Esru. But statistically, how often does someone who teaches Torah die in Yerushalayim? I mean, not for bad things, a lot of people die. Just there's a lot of Torah teachers. Again, you have to be normal. But, you know, very often it's like, Pashati skutanti echach al bashena, rachati sragli echach atanfeim. You know, you have to try and make a little effort and even, you know, a little self-sacrifice to go to Levayas. Obviously, when it comes to, you know, you're learning and you're working and you can't miss so much time, etc. So you have to use your judgment. But certainly, if you're, you know, if it's just a matter of inconvenience, also you have to use your judgment. You can't go crazy, but...
Is there a star that the working people, they're not going to go to funerals, a lawyer or a doctor can't go, so it's like a bizayon Torah, that the kolal people are the ones that are
I mean, you could see it both ways, because it's a mitzvah, but in general, my general mahalach is, I can say this now, because no one asked me right now. I always have trouble saying this to people, b'shaito, because it's insulting them, because it's like criticizing personally, and Bizman Hazet says in Erechim that there's no point criticizing anyone personally. But I think it's a devar pasha to me, that if someone is learning in kolel, if they're a real masmid and etc., then they should never stop learning. Okay, but what if you're not, from the future Gedolei Hador, etc.? You're a regular guy learning kolel. I think a regular guy learning kolel should not miss kolel unless he would have missed work if he was an accountant. Now, the truth is, Bizman Hazet, it's not the time of the Gemara. Accountants take off work for all kinds of things, right? We live in a leisurely society, right? It's not like it's not Shibud Mitzrayim. But an accountant takes off work to go to a bris of a close family member. An accountant takes off work for a chasana of a close family member. The accountant takes off work sometimes to go on vacation. You know? And the accountant takes off work to go to a doctor's appointment. And, you know, we live in a world where, Baruch Hashem, we have a lot of leisure and the accountant can take off sometimes. But I really think that, you know, Bein Mitzad Dini Mamanus, Bein Mitzad Telkos Talmud Torah, that you have to think a lot about taking off from kolel, if you wouldn't take off if you were an accountant. I think in general, should you go to every funeral which you wouldn't go to if you were an accountant, so here it's tricky, you're going to do a mitzvah, and maybe guys who were in kolel should do more mitzvahs, but on the other hand, you know, especially if no one else is going to do it, but, you know, the ikaron, I think that, yeah, you shouldn't be, clearly that's against this whole simon, right? The guys who are working should go to more. So still, you could say just because they do something wrong doesn't mean we should. But in general, I think the proper Kavanah Torah is to try to not take off more than you would if you were an accountant. Again, should you take off less than an accountant? Okay, so that everyone has to live up to their madriga. Yes, the Vilna Gaon took off less than an accountant, right? So if you want to grow in Torah with the Shmendes Hasmada, then take off less than an accountant. But if you're, you know, just a regular guideline for a regular kolel guy, I think an accountant is a reasonable guideline, and that's what I think that's the proper derech. I tried to. They still do this when I started the kolel elyon in YU. I said, you know what, kolel elyon, we already finished smicha. Smicha is like the law school. Okay, how do law school guys dress? They don't wear ripped jeans and, a Metallica t-shirt. But they don't wear a suit and tie. So, okay, so I didn't wear a suit and tie every day. But already, if I finish and I'm in the Kol Elyon, now I'm not in law school, now I'm in the clerkship. Right? Now I'm doing my specialization, whatever. Then people wear a suit and tie. So I decided to tell all my friends and started a new trend. All the guys in Kol Elyon should wear suits or jackets and ties, suits and ties for coming to Torah. Do they still do that?
Yeah.
No. Some do? Okay, but some do. It's still alive. Baruch Hashem. Great. You know, it's fine. You don't want to do it for Gaiva, but I don't think it was Gaiva. Yeah, but of course nowadays, what? Since my days in Kol Elyon, the lawyers and accountants stop wearing suits and ties. So the so I don't know, the world has one can argue, whether when Western society, finally sounded its death knell, was it when the bankers and lawyers and accountants stopped wearing suits and ties? Was it, as Rav Lachman holds, when they aired the first episode of Three's Company? But it's all part of the same phenomenon. So I don't know what to do nowadays. Nowadays we live in a society where no one's mechabed anything. Okay, back to our regular scheduled programming. Gimel haros ameis ve'inu alvei over mishul moed l'rush u'bar nidu v'yul l'fashti alvein dalet amos. If you see a mace and you don't do it, you don't walk with the mace, that's loig l'rush and bar nidoy. Nidoy is like what we call cherim. And you should at least walk dalet amos. That's why at funerals, a lot of people who can't go to the cemetery, they just walk dalet amos with the mace, because at least you should be malave. Dalet amos. And Pashtun, all the Echronim, what does it mean at least? Pashtun is, means if you have to go and you can't go the whole time, you should at least do Dalet Amos using your common sense. Dalet Ophim, Ophim, Sarch, Lovos, Ameis, Sarch, Lamon, Mipanov. Even if you don't have to walk with the mace, now you have to figure out what's the case when you don't have to walk with the mace, even Dalet Amos. And the Echronim argue, what's the case when you don't have to walk with the mace, Dalet Amos? Some people say that, if you're learning, you don't have to walk Dalet Amos, only if you're working. Other people say if you already have 600,000 people, then you don't have to walk Dalet Amos. But whatever the case, there's also a chiyuv to stand up for the mace. Here, there's a tremendous, fascinating machlokas among the Nosei Kalim here. Who do you have to stand up for? Right? So, the Taz here says, who are you standing up for? Not the mace, but the Kovri HaMace, the Nosei HaMace, the Gomli Chasadim. And from here we learn that, here they learned that you have to stand up for someone doing a mitzvah. What's the mocker in the mission of standing up for someone doing a mitzvah? Bikurim, right? They stood up for the Mevi Bikurim. So likewise, he said, we're not standing up for the mace. We're standing up for the Kovrei HaMace. This is a big machlokes. There are actually three opinions about this. The Taz says you're standing up for the Kovrei HaMace. The Nekudas HaKesef says here, one second, and that he quotes from the Torah in the name of the Rishalmi. He says that, so definitely, Mipnei Gomlei Chasadim Chayav Lamod. How about with the Hamase? Here there are three opinions. The Taz says, only if the Mase is a Talmud Chacham. Because you have to show. But if the Mase is a regular person, then you only stand for the Kovrei Mase. The Nekudas HaKesef says, nope, Potter. Even if the Mase is a Talmud Chacham, you don't stand up for him. There's no din standing up for Talmud Chacham once he's dead. And the Pisri Tshuva quotes the Yad Eliyahu that says you are chayiv to stand up for any mace. For shal kavra mace, even if he's not a Talmud Chacham. So there are three opinions. What's the nafkamina? You always have to stand up for the kovra mace anyway, right? So the only nafkamina would be if, let's say, for some reason there was a Jewish mace being carried by goyim, and you don't have to stand up for the goyim, which is weird because that's against the minhag and against the proper kavod. But in some emergency situation, or in some other strange situation where a mace was not being carried by someone, I don't know, they invented Jetsons kind of thing that carries the mace on its own. Then the Yad Eliyahu would say you stand for the mace. Taz would say only if he's a Talmud Chacham. And the Shach would say not at all. Halacha l'maase, what?
At a hospital, might come up.
Let's say the orderlies are wheeling a mace down the hospital category. The Jewish orderlies wheeling a Jewish mace. Then that would be a three-way machlokes achronim.
When the mace is moving?
When the mace is moving, yes.
So otherwise, like whenever it's
yes,
scared.
Yes, only when it's moving.
Also, if Jews are moving any mace,
could also be, but that depends how much of a mitzvah it is to bury a goyish mace. It's for Darkei Shalom, so maybe not. Anyway, halach l'maase, we all know Rav Schechter's famous ha'ara. There's a minhag nowadays, if you ever go to a chasana, that they stand up and the chasana and kala walk down the aisle. Why is that? So some people say it's a stupid minhag. It's just amaratza. Some people say no, because the chasana is a din of a melech, and I guess the kallah is a malka. And therefore, you should stand up for them. Rav Schechter points out that that's not the pashup shot. They don't have the din of a melech till after they get married. And we don't stand up for them all shever brachos when they have din of a melech. Rav Schechter says, no, pashup, I'll tell you why we stand up the chas and kallah walk down the aisle. Because they're on the way to do a big mitzvah. It's a big mitzvah to get married. Big, big, big mitzvah to get married. Beginning of Shulchan Aruch Eben Ezer says one of the biggest. And therefore, if we stand up for people burying the dead, which is also a big mitzvah, then getting married is even a bigger mitzvah, so we stand up for them. I think it's a good shot. I don't know if someone said it before, Schechter, but it makes a lot of sense.
What about the relatives?
What relatives? In the wedding or the funeral?
In the wedding.
No, you don't have to stand up when the relatives walk down the aisle. They're not doing the mitzvah. Maybe they save a tachum, etc., you know, but I think the minigas, they don't stand up for the relatives. The relatives aren't doing the mitzvah. I mean, they're doing a little bit of a mitzvah attending the wedding, but they're not the main people doing the mitzvah, so are you. You know, it's the chazan and kallah are doing the real mitzvah here.
And if people don't, I thought people would stand up like 100 people.
I don't know. I don't know. I mean, you know, it all depends who the people are. You know, if the relatives, the Rosh Hashiva, they just stand up. Yeah, okay, but not the same. Okay, Victor.
What would be the Achra
is a great it's a fascinating question. What would be the Achra? I'm not sure, it doesn't really come up so much. Okay, hey Arna Overmarkum, welcome shoulder chemistry from Volkswagen Shasta Tazamase. Remember we saw this already, it's not so again nowadays. Nowadays, even if they send an orange stroll, it gets there in one day or 2 days if they're in Australia or something. And we saw this already. Okay, Shin Samach Beis. We're going to maybe fall a little behind. Shin Samach Beis. Likbar Bit Karka. Okay, and then we'll figure out what we're doing next. One more sentence. Hanose Meso Ba'arav Lo Kavar B'Karka Over Mishum Melinet Hamet. If you put your mace in a, in a box and you don't bury him in the ground, that is an Isser Halonis HaMeis because he's not Nikbar. Kura has to be in the ground. However, an aron in the ground is mutter. This, as we know, is a big difference between minig chutzlarts and minig eretzstrol. Minig chutzlarts, they bury and put an aron in the ground. Minig eretzstrol, they put in the ground without an aron. When we call makom yafel kavur b'karka mamash v'yizvah chutzlarts, says the machaber, he thinks it would be better even in chutzlarts to bury without an aron, because in there's more kapara in being mamish in the ground, that it's more of a kiyum to put them in the ground. However, the minig chutzlarts is to do an aron. However, the Shach points out here is that you shouldn't completely enclose him in an aron. He should still be open to the ground. How do we do that? So the Shach mentions a few minhagim. First, he says the aron shouldn't be closed on all sides; it should have an opening. That's not what we do. Our arons have all six sides. So what's another option? So he says, the Drisha says, we put pottery shards on him. That's part of the Torah process. They put pottery shards on him. Maybe that's how even with the Aron, we still put him in the ground. The Shach says also, our Aronos, they have space where it's like joined together, where the boards are nailed together, and therefore it's still open to the ground. Our Aron, that's not what we do, but we do something even better. The minhag nowadays is that we put holes in the bottom of the urn. You're not going to see it because you don't see the bottom of the urn at a funeral. But if you go to a funeral, I mean, don't try this. But if you go to a funeral, like turn the urn and like look on the bottom, then, or you know, or like lie on the floor when they're carrying the urn that last bit without a stretcher, you would see there are holes in the bottom. In order to make high in the ground, even when he's in an urn, there are holes on the bottom. And that's similar to the Shach's Maskana. We also put pottery shards, and pottery is made of dirt. The Ber Hetev mentioned another minhag that we usually do. Ber Hetev says that the minhag is, we put a bag of dirt under his head, and specifically, the minhag is usually put a bag of dirt from Eretz Yisrael under his head for Chiperet Maso Amo. So we do a lot of minhagim in Chutzlaretz. Every place with their own minhagim, but the general minhag in Chutzlaretz do a lot of things that even the Arum should still be in the dirt. Number one, we put holes on the bottom of the Arum. Number two, we put pottery shards inside, and pottery is made of earth. And number three, we usually try to put a bag of dirt from Eretz Yisrael in there, and therefore we have a lot of involvement of the afar, even when we put the mace in a coffin.
It's just like a store of dirt from Eretz Yisrael.
Many chaver kedushas, yeah. I mean, it's not so hard. You know, this Yeah. The Rambam says, Mos Mashiach, all the Madonna will be in Tzuyin Ka'afar. It means nowadays, even Ufer is Matzah Ka'afar. Yeah, so we don't do that. What he meant is that it was their workmanship wasn't so advanced and there were always holes in it. That's what we do, but we purposely drill holes in the body.
If someone's cremated, is there any aim to bury the ashes?
If someone's cremated, is there an aim to bury the ashes in the ground? I think there is. Right, I think there is. The tricky part is, this is a matter of migdar milsa. If someone's willingly cremated, then a lot of places have the minhag that they will not bury them in a Jewish cemetery as a knas, as a disincentive. So a lot of places will not bury ashes in a Jewish cemetery if someone is willingly cremated as a disincentive. But the Ikar Ma'on, yes. They should be buried outside the Jewish cemetery. But a lot of places like will not sit Shiva or have a funeral for someone who's cremated because of the Migdar Milsa that we shouldn't make this an acceptable option. So every place has their own minhagim. You know, there's not halachas about this. This is very much a matter of minhag. I don't know any Orthodox rabbi who would mamash do a funeral service for someone being cremated because that's like saying it's okay to cremate them right now. But every situation is different. How about sitting Shiva after the guy's cremated? Like, by now, there's nothing you can do about it. So then there are different minhagim about that. But that's really a matter of local minhag because there's no halachas about it. It's just migdar milsa.
What's the heter in, I've seen
What's the heter of burying them in the walls? Because if the walls are mechubar l'karka, they count as the ground. Right, that's the in Har Menuchos now. If you don't pay a lot of money,
there's no dirt on the bottom surface of it.
I think they also put dirt there, but I can't put someone in a closet and just put dirt there. That doesn't count.
See, when the Gemara talks about like kuchen, right? That's talk kuchen.
Kuchen are right? Dug into the ground.
Right, meaning like they're
dug into the bedrock.
Even though it's in a wall, it's actually on dirt, right?
Yeah, no, it doesn't have to be dirt. I mean, kuchen are dug into the natural. Rocky terrain.
Right.
So it doesn't have to be dirt. Rocks could also count. Okay, Lemaisa, this is very controversial, but the mainstream halacha says that anything built into the ground, and especially since it's built out of, if I understand correctly, cement, which is made of dirt somehow, so it's considered part of the ground. So that's where a lot of people end up buried nowadays, unless you're willing to pay a lot of money extra. Okay, everyone has their own opinion on these things. So I'm not going to get into politics.
Does the government provide free burial?
It does, but only the cheapest option. And this is the cheapest option. The government provides free burial, and this is what they provide. And if you want an actual plot, then you have to pay extra. What can I tell you? I mean, there's been a lot of controversy about this, as you can well imagine. And it's a very sensitive issue. And first, there's all the controversy between the Rabbanim and the politicians and everyone. And now, every time someone dies, there's a controversy because the kids say, we want our free burial, and they say here, and they say, that's not a burial. What are you talking about, you Nazis? And then they get into blows with the Chevra Kadisha, and it's not pretty. Well, and whatever, it's a bad, it's a, what?
Why don't they just start in the cemetery?
Because there's no place that they could have, oh, I'm obviously not very good at geography, but people who are in the industry swear to me there's no more room to bury people the old-fashioned way in Israel because it's a small country. Like, it's not that small a country. Like, there's a lot of empty fields. I must admit, I haven't been zocher to fully understand the new policies of the, you know, of the people in charge of Israel nowadays. And even outside of Yerushalayim, things are moving in the direction of squeezing more people in one way or another, burying people on top of each other, etc., you know, even when they're not building big things. I don't know. If you ask me, I would say that's not a real covenant base. Real covenant base, they're buried the way we've been burying people for the last 2,000 years, or for the last 1,000 years, 1,500 years at least, in a way that makes the families feel like they're properly honoring their loved ones, and, you know, if it costs a little more money, so we should spend a little more money on that and a little less money on something else. Now, I know that's easier said than done, but no one asked my opinion. What can I tell you?
Isn't part of it that, like, who wants to be the first one? Who's like, guess what? You're not part of where all of God's Israel has been buried for an all of your life for a long, long time. Like, you're going to be the first one out in a random field.
I don't know, whatever it is, there's a lot of controversy about this. you know, it doesn't make, you know, I don't understand the logic of the way they do things nowadays, but no one asked me my opinion. And it's, I don't know, I you know, if it was up to me, maybe I'd have different priorities. But what can I tell you? But that's definitely the direction things are going in Israel at this point in time. Who knows what will be in the future. Okay, I think maybe our time is somewhat up. You know what, let's just briefly run through this, because then we're not going to have time. Beis, Nosna Meis Al Gabav, he has to be back down, Upar L'malin, face up. And again, the minig al pi sod is that through the entire tower we keep in this way. Kadam Shu Yashin, like sleeping. Ein Kovrim Beis Meisim Zevet Tzadzeh, you can't bury two mason next to each other. Elam can Dofen Akar Mafsik Benam, unless there's a wall between them. I mean, the two people can't share a grave. There has to be a wall in between them. How big of a wall? Rabbi Kivayger here says six tfachim. L'chatkila, they need a six tefach wall of dirt or something in between them.
Wide.
Yes, wide in between them. There are those who are more makel. We're not going to get into it now. However, lo aleinu, a man can be buried with his young son or even daughter, a woman with her young daughter or even son, or young grandson or daughter. The rule is, anyone young enough that it wouldn't be a tznius problem to sleep in your bed when you're alive is young enough that they can be considered tafel to their parent or grandparent and be buried in the same kever when they're dead. It doesn't mean like a man with his 12-year-old son, who, since they're the same gender, might not be tznius problem. No, it means anyone who's young enough that if they were a different gender, it would still be tznius to sleep together, is young enough that, oh, it's just tafel, like in the old days when they used to put the kids on the mother's passport. It's all one person. It's just she goes along with them. So then it's not a lack of kavod to bury them together.
With Avram and Sarah, Avram and Sarah made it. Like holding each other in their death. Did that happen afterwards?
I'm not sure exactly how literally to understand exactly where they were buried, and you know, they weren't they decomposed? Maybe it's a vision. Maybe it's a bechina of something. Sorry, Ian. But no, you cannot bury the husband and wife in the same grave halachically. Do with it what you may. Ain't no sevizer on zeh al zeh. You also can't bury two people on top of each other. If you have nothing, COVID elyon sheyifane, and if they do, they have to take the tachbay out. Then yeshkin offer shisha tfachim mutter. But if there's six tfachim of vertical space in between them, it's mutter. So if you want to bury people, I know some cemeteries have started doing that. They bury one person deeper than they used to. Put more than six tfach to be on the safe side. They put eight or ten tfach of dirt in between. And then they bury someone else. That would be mutter again. Not so traditional. Maybe not the biggest kavod, but would be mutter. And Rabbi Kiva Eger and many poskim say likewise next to each other means six tfachim horizontally. That's machlokas. There are those who are rankel, but l'chachila, six tfachim vertically, six tfachim horizontally. Okay, in Kovrim Rashi, Itzel Tzadik, Field Rashi, Kovrim, Itzel Rashi, Kavachin, in Kovrim Tzadik, Fish Kosher, Reynoni, Itzel Chatzim, Muflug, Kovrim Balchuvah, Itzel Tzadik, Gomer. Okay, you're not supposed to bury people in different madrigas of Rishos. With Tzadikim or with the people on different madriga. Lamaisa, nowadays, it's, you can imagine that it would cause World War III to be machped too much on this, and we're not machped so much on this, but generally in some forests, they bury big Dole Torah in a special section, you know, to try and be mekayim this a little. Two people who are mortal enemies, you should not bury them right next to each other, even though, like, it's too late for them to pull each other's hair at this point, but it's not the kavod, and therefore you shouldn't bury someone next to their big enemy. We'll have to continue Emir Tzashem next time. What are we going to do next time, since I fell behind for the first time? But I want to briefly mention some things. Next year is really supposed to be all about Tumas Kohanim, which is very Negelah Maaser for Kohanim, even though it's not technically Hilchos Avelos. But Shin Samach Gimel, Shin Samach Dalid, and Shin Samach Ches are Lemaisa. So maybe we'll run through highlights of Shin Samach Gimel, Shin Samach Dalid, Shin Samach Ches. And then we'll go on to Shin Samach Tesh, Shin Ayin, Shin Ayin Aleph, which is Tumas Kohanim. Yeah. Hey, Vav and Zion, I'll mention one line from. Bye.